we have a motion to approve those?
I motion that we approve them.
Okay. We have one motion to approve by David. You second?
No, I'll second, Steve.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. All in favor?
Aye.
That's unanimous, thank you. All right, now our agenda for tonight. Everybody's had a chance to look at our agenda for tonight. Do we have a motion to approve our agenda for tonight?
I make that motion to approve the agenda.
That was Brett, makes a motion.
I'll second it.
All right, thank you, David. All in favor?
Aye.
All right, thank you. Well, we'll do a wildlife board update. I'm going to ask Dan Abadie to give us that. I missed the last board meeting, and he attended in our stead, so ask him to kind of give us an update on the last board meeting.
You bet. So, yeah, this is kind of an update from our RAC meeting we had back in early December, where there were a couple things, kind of a smaller meeting, not a lot of things on the agenda, but the two things that we talked about and voted on were getting rid of the need for a COR for holding live lobsters. And the other thing was the bear change of just the proclamation season and bait, things like that. So both of those were approved by the Wildlife Board. There was some discussion about, I think that the DWR's proposal was to have like a 1 week pre-season baiting period. The RAC decided to vote for a 2 week like we had last year. So there was some discussion about that, but that board did go ahead and go with the 2 week pre-season baiting period. So that was it for the what the board had to vote on. Then Director Sheehan gave an update on a few highlights of what things were going on. One thing he mentioned was that the Fish and Wildlife Service was working on a draft Mexican wolf management plan. And I guess the key point there was that the wolf would only be managed within what was considered historic range of habitat or historic range for the Mexican wolf on that. Another thing he mentioned was the bountiful deer transplant was going on this winter, and said that the division was getting ready to kind of finalize that plan, and things were going well with that. That most of those deer were being transplanted out to Box Elder County, and also here in the basin of Duchesne County, and that they're seeing really good survival rates from those activities. In 2015, 200 deer were removed, and then this year I think they're shooting for 80 to be moved this year. They also talked about transplanting bighorn sheep from Antelope Island out to Oak City, and they said that was going really well. Mentioned too about a conservation easement with the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation was working on a conservation easement out near Woodruff, Utah. There had been some bison coming off the reservation here off, from the Ute Tribes reservation here crossing the river and crossing the Tadpole Plateau and going over it. I think the police was working with them, working that out. And then with the winter having a harder winter, there had been some supplemental feeding of deer and turkey. So I think that's about it. Any other updates? That's what I got.
Okay. Thank you. Well, we'll ask Region Supervisor Lloyd Blackwell to give us an update on all that news.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we had an hair growing contest in this region, I want you to know that we have the best hair grower in the whole region. Is Clint Sampson, the best biologist around. I don't know, I think he's here today.
Wow. We
love you, Clint. We love you, Clint.
Looks like a different guy.
I want my kids to remember me with
hair. Can we clarify this as back hair?
Yeah. Bad hair growing. Sorry, Clint, I had to...
What's the story of Samson?
Well. All right. To the regional update. We're starting to gear up now. Things are going faster and faster all the time, and we got our seasonals are starting to come online, and projects are starting to get underway for aquatics and habitat. Wildlife is working hard on a lot of the things that they normally do this time of the year, such as sage-grouse leg counts and spring deer classifications and things like that. All of our capture projects are finished and over with, and all of the biologists in all of the sections have done a really good job. And our outreach and outdoor recreation folks have been extremely busy this winter and spring with a lot of various viewing and educational opportunities taking place. We had 88 people attend our turkey hunting seminar, and we had some great help from our NWTF folks. And that's a lot of people to fit into this room, and was really excited to see the interest that's going on in this region for turkey hunting and learning about turkey hunting. And I believe that our outreach folks did a really good job of getting that out and getting people here. We had 47 people come out to our loon watch, and that's not biologists floating around in a boat out in the reservoir. We have actual loons. In one group, there was actually 75 loons on their way north. And so we do this every year, and it's pretty cool to watch them out there. Another thing that's really neat in the region, and we've just really been pushing this, and it's really starting to pick up. We had 115 archers that turned out for our first regional NAF competition. And that's very exciting. That's getting kids out, showing them how to shoot archery and competition. And, you know, you never really know where that's going to go. But we're really excited that we had 115 archers that were used. Our wildlife section, as I said earlier, they're busy doing their regularly scheduled deer classifications, and they finished up their black bear den work this spring, bison surveys, and now they're starting on their pronghorn flights. And so they've got a lot going on right now as well. Our habitat section is starting to gear up for summer projects. They've been meeting with the Habitat Council and other groups to try to nail down funding for several habitat projects that include bull hogging and fencing and guzzlers. We've completed a report on a project that was recently finished and is written up, and we're just waiting to get it back. And we will have a presentation on that project here in this meeting in the future. We just wanted to wait and have it on a RAC meeting when we've got more time. And that project is a study that we did on the impacts of paving the Seabridge Road and on our deer herds. It went right through deer winter range, and we'll have Ben present that to you in the near future. In our law enforcement, we just completed the interview process to replace one of our sergeants who recently retired in Dan Barnhurst. We don't have a selection made at this date. However, that'll be made in the very near future. Speaking of retirements, we have two more that will be leaving us next month, and they've both been extremely instrumental in this very process and in the RAC process. And I want them, if they would, just to stand up here so that we can recognize them. And you can type at the same time. We have Gail Alden. She's actually been our RAC liaison and has worked closely with me. She's the one that's contacted all of the RAC members to make sure that they're aware of the RAC meetings and times. And it's been really nice to, since we've been doing this, we've always had a quorum. And so we're excited about that. And then we're having, and Ron Stewart here is retiring as well in May. And I know you've seen that fuzzy face guy around here every RAF meeting, and he's been here to set things up and take care of us, and has done a really good job of making sure that these recordings get sent into Salt Lake and set up. And their expertise and the good work that they do is going to really be missed. They've shown a lot of enthusiasm for their job throughout the past 30 years. So it's cool to see them move on and check out new things in their life. Our aquatic section is really getting starting to get ramped up. I just want to give you a little bit of information regarding red fleet. I know we've talked a little bit about it in the past, that we treated red fleet. We put in, last week, in fact, we put in 150 crappie. 750,000 sterile walleye fry went in last week. And this is kind of cool because this is the first effort that the agency has had where we've had a warm water fish from one of our own hatcheries. We've never had a warm water hatchery before. Any of our warm water fish that we've put into waters in Utah have come from other states. But we were able to get our own, strip our own walleye and raise up the fry. And they, like I said, 750,000 were put into red fleet. We put in 1,200 perch, went in March. 10,000 rainbow and cutthroat went in November. 250 wipers went in November, and 2,000 more went in this week. So we're really starting to ramp up red fleet. It probably won't be really great for, you know, a year or two to come, but it's well on its way. Also, our aquatics right now are starting to work on our Pelican Lake management plan, and are looking into resetting Pelican Lake and getting it going again. So that's pretty much. As I said, I'm sure I left some things out. The guys and gals are really, really busy right now, and it's really picking up for our summer seasonal activities and. Pretty exciting, like I say, and the days just go faster and faster. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back to you.
Thank you, Boyd. You have a lot of good things going on. Well, without ado, we'll go ahead and jump into our meeting with our summer action item tonight. First of all, to Justin Shannon, who's our big game coordinator for the Bucks World Once in a Lifetime Permit Recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Justin Shannon, and tonight I'm going to present the Bucks, Bulls, and Once-in-a-Lifetime Permit Recommendations for 2016. So to begin, we'll start out with mule deer. This graph here shows general season buck harvest over the last 10 years throughout the state, and this last year in 2015, we harvested just shy of 30,000 bucks on general season units. To give some perspective, we haven't harvested that many bucks since the year 2000, so 15 years. Success rates were really high on archery, muzzleloader, and any weapon hunts. And just really good year and really good feedback from hunters this past fall. Moving on to fawn production trends. As you can see, in the early 2000s, we took a dip in our fawn production, and then we climbed out of it. In the last 7 years, things have been really stable when it comes to fawn production, between 61 and 65 fawns per 100 does statewide. Buck to doe ratio trends have been a little different. In the early 90s, on our general season units that are predominantly public land units, we've been about 7.5 to 8 bucks per 100 does 20, 25 years ago. We climbed up to about 15, and for a long time we were hovering around 15 through much of the 2000s. If you look at the last 4 years, we went from 15 to 16 bucks per 100 does to over 23 bucks per 100 does on these general season units. And those yellow lines at 15 to 20 just indicate what we're managing for, whether it's 15 to 17 or 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does. Those are kind of the sideboards. So our general season deer permit recommendation summary. This year we're recommending 90,950 permits. This is an increase of 4,400 from last year. And we do have 29 units. I know in the past we've talked about 30 units, but with the Southern Region redoing their unit management plans, they combined the Oak Creek and the Fillmore into one unit, so we now have 29. And we're recommending no change on 9 of these units and increases on 20 of them. We started presenting the data this way, and we got some really good feedback from the RACs last time we did it, so we'll continue. For the Northern Region, we have the unit on the far left, followed by the buck-to-doe ratio objective. Again, 15 to 17 or 18 to 20. And then what the buck-to-doe ratio was for 2013, 14, and 15, and the three-year buck-to-doe ratio average there on the far or in the third column to the right. Last year's permits that were approved by the Wildlife Board, and then what we're recommending this year. So as you can see in the Northern Region, we're recommending permit increases on all three or on every unit in the region for a total of 1,550 permits. For the Central Region, recommending an increase of 500 permits, which would occur on the Central Mountains Nebo and the Oak Ridge Stansberry units. The Wasatch Mountains West, even though it's exceeding the buck-to-doe ratio there, we have increased permits there the last several years, and we want to see what that looks like one more year before we propose an increase, if we propose an increase. Moving on to the Southern Region, we're recommending permit increases on the Beaver, Fillmore, Monroe, Mount Dutton, Pine Valley, Plateau Fish Lake, Thousand Lakes, and the Zion units, all of which are exceeding and across the board, every unit in the state is either at or exceeding their buck-to-doe ratio, and most of them have positive trends. We're recommending an increase of 1,050 permits for the Southern Region. And as you can see, the Plateau of Thousand Lakes has that star behind it. This is an interesting unit. It was limited entry for a lot of years. It's a very, very small unit. And the buck-to-doe ratio continues to rise. Deer are doing really well in that area. And we want to recommend an increase in permits. But instead of having a weapon split, a 20% archery, 60% any weapon, and 20% muzzleloader, we're proposing a weapon split of 30% archery, 40% any weapon, and 30% muzzleloader. So essentially the permit increases would occur in the archery and any weapon seasons. In the archery and muzzleloader seasons. In the Southeast Region, we recommend increases on the Central Mountains Manti San Rafael and the San Juan Abajo Mountains, both of which are exceeding their buck-to-doe ratio, a total of 700 permits between the two. The 9-mile unit has been a question in some of the racks. This is a unique unit where the tops of the mountains are private and the bottoms are public. And so increasing more tags doesn't always equate to more harvest in these situations. And so there's some things that we need to look at a little closer. One is increases in late season muzzleloader hunts that we proposed new last year, and you'll see that as we move forward. For the Northeast Region, let's spend some time on this. We're recommending a total of 600 permits increase from last year for a total of 11,100. These increases are being proposed for the South Slope Yellowstone, Wasatch Mountains East, and the South Slope Bonanza Vernal. Again, on the South Slope Bonanza Vernal, we're recommending that 30% of the permits go to archery hunters and 50% go to any weapon. This is a deviation from most units that are 60-20-20, but our management plan allows for it. It says that we'll allocate permits at a 60-20-20 allocation unless we're trying to address a management-related need. And the need on this unit is, in the past, biologists have recommended permits decreases, and they've been approved. And what's happened is success rates continue to climb. The South Slope Bonanza Vernal, again, for the second year in a row, had the highest success rate in the state. Over 70% of any weapon hunters are harvesting deer. And so we wanted to provide some more of that opportunity, but put it in a weapon type that wouldn't necessarily result in additional harvest. Moving on to premium limited entry deer units, these are managed to an age objective. So the Henrys and the Ponsagon, what we'd like to see on these units, according to the management plan, is 40% of the bucks harvested being 5 years or older. And on the Henrys and Ponsagon units, they've exceeded that every year, and their three-year averages is well above that. So with that, we're recommending no permit increases on either of these units. Management buck permits, however, are a little different. These are predicated on a buck-to-doe ratio. So on these units, we manage for 40 to 55 bucks per 100 does. And as you can see on the Henry Mountains, we're exceeding that for this year at 56 is our three-year average. This kind of took us by surprise. I don't think anybody thought we'd end up with 65 bucks per 100 does down there. And as we got the classification data and looked at that, it really put our three-year average over that. Ponsagon's at 46, or just shy of that. For permit recommendations on the Henry Mountains, we recommend no increases in permits. And we understand it's warranted. We're exceeding the buck-to-doe ratio. The challenge on that unit is it's so small, and when you're dealing with an antler point restriction and having hunters make sure and take the time that, yeah, there's 3 points or less, we've got negative feedback as we've climbed higher than that. And so one thing that we really need to do, and you'll probably see something this November from us, is most likely an additional management buck hunt on the Henry Mountains. It's something we've got to address. And then on the Ponsagon, we're recommending an increase of 9 permits from 16 to 25. Moving on to limited entry, what I have is the units there on the far left. Again, the objective, 25 to 35 bucks per 100 does for all these units. The three-year average there in the third column to the right. Last year's permits and this year's recommendations. Overall, we're recommending an increase of 12 permits overall. These are the bulk of these would be on the South Slope Diamond Mountain. We're recommending an increase of 10 permits from 76 to 86. And again, that three-year average is over 40 bucks per 100 does. The other thing to point out is on the Book Cliffs, are recommending what looks like an increase of one permit from 434 to 435, likely due to rounding. But what we are doing is proposing a few more permits on the north and a slight decrease on the south, simply to better align with the buck-to-doe ratio, which is something that came out of a committee that was held here in the northeast region a few years ago to split off that any weapon hunt and have more flexibility in where permits are allocated. Moving on to limited entry late season muzzleloader deer permits. Last year we had 46. This year we're recommending 142. This is mostly because of the increase of six permits, the six units that we had. One thing, as we took this through the public process last year, a lot of the RACs and public were asking, what is going to be the feedback on this? And so we went through and looked at every harvest and hunter success and the feedback they gave us. Hunters loved it. We had hunters that were using double-digit bonus points to apply for these permits. And the feedback that we got is, we wish the hunt would have gone later into the rut. And I get, if I had that permit, I'd want the same thing. I mean, it makes sense to me. But the way that the hunt was set up is to keep that in the earlier part of November with the muzzleloader to prevent some of that. So that's the report back on how hunters, the feedback that hunters had on that hunt. So in total, just to summarize, for limited entry, we're recommending an increase of 108 permits for 1,186 statewide. Moving on to elk, recommend no change in spike permits this year, again, 15,000. The statewide success rate in 2015 was 14%. And on our any bull hunts, we're recommending an increase of 700 permits from 14,300 to 15,000. The reason, the why behind this recommendation is with the statewide elk committee that was formed last year and the plan that was approved by the Wildlife Board in December, it set those any bull permits at 15,000 for the life of the plan. We looked at where we've grown elk in the state over the last 7 years, 6 years or so from when the last plan was due, and it was on these any bull units, so there's some opportunity there. And then again, youth any bull, recommend no change. One more thing to report back to the RACs that we've committed to do. Last year, we increased youth inning bowl permits from 300 to 500. And the feedback that we got was positive. Success rates increased slightly, and hunter satisfaction rates were high. And so good feedback on that youth inning bowl hunt. So we committed to respond to their asks and give an update, and that's the update for the youth inning bowl hunt. Moving on to limited entry elk permit recommendations, we recommend a decrease of 142 total permits for 2,796 total. The bulk of these cuts have to do with changes in age objectives from the statewide elk plan that was passed. And as we go through the slides, those that have a star by the name will indicate units that changed in age objective. So starting out with the 7.5 to 8-year-old units, we're recommending a decrease of 13 permits. And those reductions are being proposed on the Beaver East and the West Desert Deep Creeks. Again, the West Desert Deep Creeks are a unit that was managed for a lower age objective in the past and was now raised. In addition, a slight increase on the San Juan units. For the 6.5 to 7-year-old units, a lot of movement here. A lot of units were added to this age objective through the plan revision. So I'd like to highlight some of those. We're recommending an increase on the Bookcliffs Bitter Creek, which is at 7.5 for the 3-year objective. Recommending an increase in permits on the Monroe. No change on South Slope, a change of 1 on South Slope Diamond Mountain from 47 to 48. And decreases on the South Cache, Central Mountains Nebo, Mount Dutton, Panguitch Lake, and Southwest Desert. One that really sticks out here that we may get questions on, so I'll point it out ahead of time. The Southwest Desert, if you look at that, it's still exceeding their average age on that. Yet we're cutting 44 permits on that unit. And the reason behind this is Southwest Desert has always carried a very high age, and that region has got very aggressive with permits in the past. And so we knew this day would come, and when we saw a decrease in age by almost 1 year, we wanted to get out ahead of that cut, because last year the average age was 6.8, which is really where we want it to be. So trying to be proactive in that regard. 5.5 to 6-year-old units, recommending an increase of 35 permits total. Those increases are being proposed on the LaSalle Mountains and the Wasatch Mountains. And we're recommending decreases on the 9-mile Anthro and the Oker Stansbury units. Again, the Oker Stansbury is one that pretty good cut in age in 1 year, and so like to be a little proactive there. And then finally, for our 4.5 to 5-year-old units, overall there's no change for these units, but every one of them has a little movement. Recommending increases on every one except for the Cache North, where we're recommending a reduction of 14 permits. Moving on to Pronghorn, statewide recommend a decrease of 33 permits. Most of these cuts are being proposed for the Parker Mountain Plateau and the Morgan South Cache Ridge. I don't know, there's like three units put together and I can never get that right. So those two units, but a lot of our other units that we've flown this year are smaller pocket units, the ones that might have single-digit permits or low teens. A lot of those units did very well in the state and seeing some increases there. And then finally, for once in a lifetime, for moose, recommending a slight increase in permits from 65 to 68. Bison recommending an increase of 16 permits. Minor movements in the Desert Bighorn and Rocky Mountain Bighorn categories, increases of 1 on each, and then a slight reduction on mountain goat permits. And that's all I have. Thank you. And I know we'll have questions, Mr. Chair, and I'd just like to point out, if we have statewide questions that deal with these types of things, plans, I'm happy to answer them. But we also have lots of biologists and wildlife managers here to answer questions that might be site-specific that I wouldn't know as well as they would. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Christian. Just a little process, talk about our procedure here. What we'll do is we'll do the presentation just like we just did. And we've got these comment cards. If you want to make a comment towards a particular topic, please fill out one of these comment cards and get them to us. After a presentation like this, there'll be questions from the rack. We'll ask questions, and then we'll have questions by the audience. And if you'd like to ask a question, please come up to this mic right here to state your name. If you're with a specific organization, please tell us what that is also, and then ask your question. And afterwards, we'll have some comments by the public, and then by the RAC, and then we'll have comments. That's when you come up with these cards. We'll have comments there. Then afterwards, after that comment period over, then we'll do a little discussion up here, and we'll hopefully make some decisions. So yeah, that's kind of the process we need to follow. So first of all, I'd like to ask a question before we get started.
Sure.
Can you go back to the Northeast Region slide?
Deer.
I guess this, and I don't know if this question is for Dax, or maybe I guess it's going to be for Clinton because Dax left. go to the one that shows Diamond Mountain, South Slope Diamond Mountain.
For limited entry, this one here?
Yes.
They're near the bottom.
Yes, down the second one from the bottom. I guess the question I got, that increase of the buck-to-toe ratio from 36 and 13, 36 and 14, and 49 and 15, is that, do we actually put an eyeball on every one of those bucks, or do we have some kind of ratio type thing? We count so many, but I think we miss so many. Or do we actually put an eyeball on every one of those, and we actually saw 49 bucks per average of every 100 does out there? I'm done about it.
Yeah, I can talk specifically on how we classify deer statewide. And I'm sure if it doesn't apply to Diamond, speak up and correct me. So in the West, Western United States, most Western states manage to a buck-to-doe ratio. And what we do is, for Utah in particular, we'll go to a unit and we'll find the winter ranges where deer congregate during the rut. And so when you go, you hit representative subsamples of where these deer are going on these units. And you classify the deer, and they've run a bunch of statistical analysis on it. And it seems like once you hit about 400 does, you have very good confidence in that buck to doe ratio. And so, do you see every buck? No, I don't think anybody has the capacity to see every buck on the unit. I think technically it's impossible. But with these ratios, what it does is it allows you to compare where we're at this year relative to years past. And really the most important part of these things is the trend. So. Does that help, Randy? Anything to add on?
Yeah, I think it does. But we're actually counting the deer, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we are counting every deer, and then every
deer we see. So, you know, it can't be every deer on the unit because it's just impossible. But what we do is when we find the deer, we classify it as a buck, a doe, or a fawn, and that's how the earlier slide, I can give a fawn to doe ratio, and then we can give a buck to doe ratio as well.
Our sample size on Diamond Mountain, we counted 1,004, classified 1,004 deer. So how many we classified when we were collecting the data to come up with this ratio.
Thank you. All right, any other questions for the RAC?
How many permits are you for the
9 mile
on the big ones?
Let me check real quick.
Is there any increase on that?
No, I think there's a decrease this year on the 9 mile range creek. I think it's a decrease of 2, if I remember right. But let me check the RAC packet for you real quick. Yes, it's an increase of 2 permits on the 9 mile range creek. No, a decrease of 2. Sorry, did I say increase? A decrease, yeah.
And then another question is on the booklet side. With our board, we usually give out 100 bull tags on the Hill Creek side. We had to take it clear down to 50. So, you know, I don't know how you guys are thinking that the increase of the Bitter Creek and the Book Creek side.
Yeah.
No, I just don't agree with that at all.
Are you talking Little Creek or the Bitter Creek?
The Bitter Creek and the Book Creek.
Yeah, so the Little Creek permits are staying the same. And then on the Bitter Creek, we're managing for a 6.5 to 7-year-old bull, and our 3-year average is 7.6. And so the bulls that are coming off that unit are a year older than what they should be. And really, when we set these age objectives with the statewide plan, there was a lot of balance. There was a lot of people on these committees that said we need opportunity, and there were people that said we need quality. And that's why we have so many different age categories. And so on these units, if we're above, we'll increase permits, and if we're below, we'll decrease permits. So simply trying to get to that age objective is what we're doing.
Because I know we're just across the canyon.
Sure.
You know, and like I said, we had to take tags from more or people to meet that objective. You know, it's, to me, I just, I don't agree with that at all.
Okay.
Question on the late season muzzleloader deer tags.
Yeah, yes.
What was the success rate? Do you have an age? Did they take off the really mature bucks at any age, do you think?
We'll go success rates first. So on the Morgan unit, it was 7 out of 9. Camas was 2 out of 4. Pine Valley, 7 out of 8. 9 Miles, 7 out of 9. Southwest Desert. That's an E. Southwest Desert was 2 out of 3, and Zion was 100%, 10 out of 10. So it's a pretty good success rate. I think most of those units are right in line with our limited entry hunts that we have on these units.
So the ones that you had them last year, they're new hunts this year.
Yeah. Sorry, if there's a dash there, we just didn't have permits for last year, and so pretty good influx of units this year.
Was your perception that they, by being able to hunt in the rut in general season, that they're taking off the quality bucks out of these general areas?
One thing we've got to be careful of, it's not, by design, it wasn't intended to be in the rut. It's supposed to be this early November. I think as we talked last November, CWMUs, I mean, they're hunting their deer up until November 10th, and this program's really no different. So it's really before that hot and heavy rut's occurring on most of these units in the state. So it is prior. And were there good bucks taken? Yeah. But I don't think anyone reported I took the cream off the crack. I mean, people were happy. There were mature bucks taken, but that was kind of by design. If hunters are using double-digit bonus points on these hunts, and there's no other hunters out there, certainly some good bucks were harvested. Yeah.
When you guys did your survey down there on the footprint, how many elk did you figure that was at that age limit that you guys were trying to get the permits for that year of objective? For like the 7 and 6 year old bulls.
As far as our flight data, to break it down for you, we counted, and again, we run grids out there with a helicopter, similar to you. Just so
everybody
else. So as far as overall size, we basically classify them as spikes, raghorn bulls, or branch, smaller branch antler bulls, and then mature bulls. And so out of the 411 bulls we saw from the air, 140 to 43 of those we classified as mature bulls. And so that helps you with those numbers. But like you said, overall, we just take the age data and run the numbers off there and try to meet our management.
I know our count was way down. I mean, way, way down. There was, if I'm wrong, Jeremy, you wanted to get the flyover. How many heads did we have as far as even that objective?
Not very many, but like I said, it's been a hard winter. The winter came fast and just displaced a lot of elk and counts and what they usually are, and the quality of the bulls are coming down, and that's why we dropped
board permits on the other side.
What's your last name?
Jeremy Kidd.
Kidd, thank you.
Can I point out something on flight debt? We're really talking two different things. Taking a survey in February or January is much different than bulls that would be available on the landscape, say, in September. Bulls cover a lot of distance in a 4 or 5 month period. And the other thing is, when we survey at this time, bulls and cows are what we call sexually segregated, where because there's not rutting activity, they're not breeding, bulls will select certain habitats, cows will select certain habitats. And so on most of our units in the state, as we survey, bulls are always more difficult to come up with. And so really what we're talking about is age data. As bulls are harvested, we cut the teeth, we age them, we stain it, and we say, okay, this amount of bulls was harvested at this age. And there's really good ways to track that moving forward. And so it's really tough to fly 4 months after, 5 months after some of these hunts have occurred, and say these are the same bulls that would have been available for harvest from that same area. So there's some challenges in comparing what we're trying to compare here.
Yeah, because okay. I know some of our hunters were very, very unhappy last year, you know, because the mature bulls weren't there.
Okay. Jerry, you have a question?
Yeah. Could you pull up the open bull elk slide that you had?
Sure.
It was with the spikes, I think.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
I see that you raised the any bull 700 up to 15,000. I have two questions. One, is it to decrease the herd? And the second part of that question is, do you think you'll even be able to sell those permits? Haven't some of the years in the past gone right to the last day before they even sold out?
Yeah, to answer the first question, this is really designed on providing opportunity. When we looked at what our objectives were, our population estimates were in 2008, 2009, prior to the last plan where these numbers were set, and where it is today, we've grown a lot of elk on any bull units. And so it was really, and 700 candidly is a pretty modest increase compared to some of the growth we've had on these any bull units. And so we think it'll match what's available. And the second question on can we sell these permits, was that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how far back we waited till the last day. I don't have that information. I'm not sure when that was. But I know on our spike and any bull, it seems like every year they're selling out earlier and earlier and earlier. And as we went through some of this on the committee, there was a lot of conversation about how do we provide additional hunting opportunities, particularly on general season units. So we felt like it was a pretty fair compromise. And this 15,000 is a number that you'll see recommended throughout the life of the plan, because that number is actually set in the plan, similar to our spike numbers. So does that help?
Yeah, it's... It gets crazy over on the north side, mm-hmm. on the elk hunt, probably more crazy than it does on the deer hunt. And I don't look forward to having more hunters over there during the any bull season, because they all hunt on the road.
Another question from the right. Dan, you got one?
Yeah, a couple questions I've got. Some feedback on the Oak Cliffs bull hunt. Now, since we took that to a spike season and opened up to a spike elk season, we're maintaining an age objective, but what's happened to our success rate since turning that over to a spike year?
Success rates on the limited entry or success
yes.
rate? Yeah, Clint, do you have some of that?
Yeah, for the archery, it was around 46%. Success. The muzzleloader was 86% success. The rifle, the early hunt was 85% success, and the late season was 77%. The satisfaction on all those borders around 4.2 out of 5. So,
and this was last year's data.
Yeah. Yep. And then, like I said, the lowest success we had was archery, 46%. But if you look statewide, it's pretty representative.
Pretty good.
What you can expect. The killed average bulls, like I said, we talked about age objective as far as overall size. They killed roughly 6 points that were 40 inches wide.
Thank you. Another second question.
Sure.
The decrease on the south slope, is that, you know, with the lower buck-to-go ratios this year after a decent fall, is that, did we have a success rate increase on that? Is that what drove those numbers down?
As far as the south slope permit numbers?
Yeah. No, the buck-to-go ratios are...
Oh, why it went down?
Yeah.
It went up to 18 last year.
He's talking south slope book clips.
Oh, the south side. Sorry. I got confused. There's too many south slopes. So if you were asking why the buck-to-doe ratio declined on the south?
Yeah, just with the split where we went to the two separate units last year, how we decreased our buck-to-doe ratios.
And that's kind of what we wanted to see. We wanted to force people's hand to harvest those bucks on the south side. Because what we found is majority of the people like to hunt with good access, good roads, and things like that on the rifle hunt. So by forcing their hand to have hunters take those bucks on the south slope, it's kind of what we expected to see. And that's why we also decreased the percentage going to the south this year. And so we'll have, I think it's 15% of the rifle hunts.
So it's a pretty high success rate. It was pretty high success last year.
It wasn't as high as the north, but I think the season dates played a lot with that, because most of the people that hunt the south, they harvest their bucks about the last 4 days of the hunt, 3 days of the hunt sometimes. And so with those shorter season dates, or earlier ending dates, it was a little bit harder of a hunt. But this next year, I expect it to be killer.
Little later dates.
Yeah, sure. It'd be really good.
Thank you. So that's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
All right, so Joe, did you have a question?
Justin, can you go to the slide for management deer? I had a question on the policy document.
Yeah.
So was there an increase? Yeah, a 9 permit increase in the policy document unit recommendation?
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking up here at the average, the buffalo ratios. And that's how these going to sort of manage, right?
For right.
Ratio. Yeah. It's like it's right within the range of the objective range. But I'm not sure why the increase.
Yeah, it's a great question. So the Ponsagot unit's a much larger unit than a Henry's, two or three times the size. And we used to have upwards to 75 of these management buck permits. And what was happening is our buck-to-doe ratio was down there in the low 40s. As you can see, 2013, we were at 42. And so we scaled way back on that, and with the understanding that, hey, once that trend reverses, once we start amping up again and it's headed, we'll provide a little bit more opportunity. And so that within these sideboards, there's flexibility with increases or decreases. That's a very, very sought-after tag, and even some of those that are seeking the premium hunts are saying we can give a few more of these. And so, really, it's interesting. We're not exceeding, but we're still increasing. The plan allows for it, though, if we want to do that. So, yeah.
Other questions? Move back. Well, question about the public. Please come to the mic, state your name.
Tyra, hey Bakeland. Justin, last November at this same RAC meeting, you informed us that you guys are unable to fly every unit every year.
Mm-hmm.
You're only able to do maybe 2-3 units a year. So I'm not exactly sure how you're getting your buck-to-doe ratio. And I'm wondering how you're able to justify a 4,530 deer permit increase off of a theoretical average.
So first of all, we don't fly any of our deer units. So if I told you that we fly 2 or 3 a year, I was incorrect. We don't fly any of our deer units. And really, the second part of your question was what? How do we justify increases?
Yeah, 4,530 permit increase.
Yeah. Again, we went through the management plan process and set the sideboards. If we're exceeding buck-to-doe ratios, you can increase permits. If you're below.
That's what I'm saying is I'm not sure how you're getting buck-to-doe ratios exactly. You know that.
Yeah.
Close enough to get that much of an increase in tag.
Oh, okay. So how it works is, we have biologists on every unit. They go and they conduct classification in November, December of each year. And so they're getting the data. They're just not doing it from the air. And biologists go and classify these winter ranges where deer are highly concentrated during the breeding season. And they obtain the data that way.
Okay, and then kind of like right up here on this Yellowstone unit, there's a lot of these deer, you know, in January, February that are on the trail when you guys are doing these surveys. So, I mean, it's just like with the elk, you get the elk out there on the 9 mile unit, most of those elk that are out there in January and February, come September, they're up on Strawberry. A lot of those elk that winter down on the river come off of Strawberry.
Sure.
On a complete different unit. So, I mean, it's kind of weird to me how we're trying to average everything out at one time of the year so we know what's on there at a different time of the year.
Yeah, specifically on the set. You know,
can I speak to the Yellowstone
part? Yeah, sure.
Can if I, you help I answer maybe some questions? First of all, we do our deer classification at the end of November and the first couple weeks of December, not in January, February, just so you know.
Okay.
What that involves basically is we go out on the ground and actually classify at least 1,000 animals on each unit. From the, you know, we actually go look at, put our eyeballs on, and can look at them well again, and find groups that we can see well enough to see exactly what's there, how many fawns are there, how many bucks are there, and how many does are there. And that's how we get our actual count, okay? Just so that ratio, that's where we come up with. Okay. And you're right, on the Yellowstone, there's a lot of these deer that move down onto the tribe. There's deer that move during the summer that move back up from the tribe and move back up. They really are the same. We've done radio power studies, we've done different studies there. These are the same animals, obviously, because they move back and forth, don't they? And you've seen it on elk, too, if you've hunted up there. We've got a lot of them that do the same thing. And you're right, they move back and forth. But what really matters here is the breeding population. So that's what we're looking at is the numbers of bucks. We all are breeding was part of what our question was. But then what we really are looking for, too, is that we manage on that buck-to-doe ratio based on what gets harvested. Really what determines that is how many bucks get killed during the fall hunts and those kind of things. And as long as we overall can maintain the 17, to, right now it's at 21,
yeah.
21 bucks per 100 does at least up in there. It's over the 20, 18 to 20 is our objective, so we're over objective on that on the Yellowstone. We have more bucks than what we have set as the objective. We are over the objective. And so we have enough bucks there, and a large share of that harvest, you know, comes on the forest. The tribe does have some harvest for sure on their land. That's, you know, they do that too. We have both. We do try to work with the tribe a little bit to coordinate those things, but we pretty well set up. You know, we don't make huge changes year to year.
Yeah.
You know, this year's recommended change is less than, it's like 6%, you know, change in permits. And obviously that's not 6% more deer going to die because you have a 50 to 60% success rate. So that's really 3% maybe that's going to actually increase the actual harvest. And so that's really what you have to take into account. Looking at these buck-to-doe ratios, is that's what we have left over. That's after all the hunts are over. These are the buck rate, the doe. That's how many bucks we still have out there afterwards. And we have more right now than we've had in 30 years on the Yellowstone lakes.
So, and then that kind of brought up another question about that, where you're doing it in November. Are you guys planning for a little bit of winter kill on each unit then, or trying to adjust for that, or
that's built into the just the nature of the system. I have every unit in the state would have the same thing. We don't plan that so many will die. We know we have an expectation of what mortality will be every year. So yes, we do calculate that in when we run the math and do the numbers to extrapolate what the population will be the next year. But really, it's impossible in December to know exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why we set these permit numbers at this time of year instead of November and December, because now we know what the winter was like this year. And so we have a survival rate. We actually have 145 deer radio collars across the South Slope that we monitor every year to keep track of how many are alive and how many die and what survival rate is every year. We can then extrapolate that to what we had last fall and know where we're at. So, yeah, that's all taken into account.
Thank you.
Blake Best representing Sportsman. Janik, can you, Justin, either one. Can you pull up your once in a lifetime slide?
Sure.
You took your bison objective from 6 to 12 on the bookcliffs. Can you get some explanation on that?
Yeah. The question is, why did we increase permits on the bookcliffs?
Correct. Okay. From 6 to 12, doubled them.
Okay. Clint, where are we at with permit recommendations?
Sure. The bookcliffs bison, it actually went from 8 to 15.
Okay.
And so it's, you know, a fair increase. And this is the bookcliffs wide hunt. Is that what we were talking about? Because there's only, there's two homes. Okay, so the early one.
We're talking public draw permits, not total. So public draw. Yeah, public draw, he's correct. We had six public draw permits last year. That's what we're recommending from.
Okay. I was looking overall.
That's okay. We're still friends, Clint.
Yeah, I'm talking just the book clips for the side.
Sure. And so the first hunt we have that's book clips wide, the main reason we increased that is the yearling bulls that we transplanted out there from the Henrys are now trophy quality. And also a lot of the native bulls that have been born out there, calves, when they first brought them out, are reaching that trophy quality. Our overall bull-to-cow ratio was 84 last time when we classified. And so 84 bulls per 100 cows. So we're showing...
And the total population on if you don't mind.
Okay. We're looking year-round as far as what... We can best guess days on the unit. I'd say for around 250. When we flew it classified in the winter, we have a fair amount of bison that come over from our friends across the river, well, across the canyon, and trying to keep them from crossing the river. But we figured, we counted full season around a little over 350 adults that way. So, like I say, it's a difficult herd to model because we have so much transfer. We have seasonal migrations that take place that increase our herd anywhere from 100 to 300 head in the winter. And so if we just try to go by what consistently stays on the unit, and we're also finding we're having more and more in the roadless area itself, and those are harder to monitor. We can only, my wife only lets me go in there so many times throughout the year to look for them in there and count them in there. And so we're fairly limited when it comes to that. But I'd say, you know, as far as our best estimate, year-round, we got around 250 animals.
And you guys have took in consideration on 12 total permits that could possibly be 14 permits? Whereas the sportsman tag and governors could be bonuses there.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think you could handle it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Another question? Please step back. Mike, state your name.
Jeremy Kidd from the Utah's Bison Manager. On your guys' increase for your bison permits. So how many would that increase for the tribal permits that we get for the next 300 cows?
I think it's supposed to be the same.
Yeah, so the percent we go on, just the numbers, the percentages that are agreed to in the cooperative agreement between the tribe and DWR. And so as soon as the numbers are finalized, then we'd run the calculations and the tribe would get their permits for a hunt in the book cliffs that is, it's like, I can't remember the exact percentage, but it's basically 25% of the permits that the state issues, the tribe gets issued 25% of that number as well. And for a unit that contains all exterior boundary lands, the book cliffs, the book or one, 25% or at least one if the number, you know, comes out to a fraction. So, but the book cliffs unit, I think it's about 14% of the book cliffs unit is exterior boundary land because the stuff down on the south end, is which is included in the hunt, is not in the exterior boundary. So when we have all that, all the numbers are in the cooperative agreement, and we can go through it and do the math with you if you want, or it's, you know, but once the numbers are finalized, we can go run the calculations and figure it out. But the percentages don't change, we just do the math every year based on what gets approved.
We only get the one permit, so you guys helped them a few years, so I think we ought to.
Yeah, we plan to follow the agreement and honor, you know, whatever's in the agreement. Any fraction below one is rounded to one, and then beyond that, it uses standard rounding practices. So if it's 0.5 or higher, it gets rounded up to the next whole number. And yeah, we can go through the math with you if you want. Once numbers get approved, we can go through and pull out a copy of the agreement and calculate it all up.
All right. Thank you, Ducks.
Thank you. Any other questions? Put your back, please.
Hallie Bywater, and I have a question, Jesse. Yeah. Why are the tags on the any bowl, or why are the any bowl tags set at a straight up 15,000 instead of fluctuating like the spike tags are?
Yeah, the statewide plan sets the spike tags at 15,000 as well.
Unless the harvest is greater than 20%, and then it drops to 14,000.
Correct. Yes.
Now, why doesn't that happen with the any bowl?
As we discussed it with the committee and took it through the public process, what we found is, as we looked back on where we've grown elk in the state, my next presentation is going to show where our elk populations have done over the last 10, 15 years or so. And what we found is where we had a lot of these increases, it was at the any bowl, it was on the any bowl units. And so, again, the spirit of the general season units is to provide hunting opportunity, and so that's why the decision was made to set that in the plan.
Thank you, Ellie. Other questions? All right, we'll go back to the RAC for a discussion. Well, let's go with comments then. I think every one of them have to do with this that we've got right now, or have to do with this particular topic. So let's just start. Blake, we'll start with you. Blake Best will step up, state your name, and make your comments.
Yeah, Blake Best, represent the sportsman. I just wanted to advise the RAC. We've got a pretty good thing going on with the bison herd out in the Buck Cliffs. So I just hate to see them start putting a herd on the herd with as many, basically doubling the tags, if not more, with the 12 tags and possible 14 could be possibly harvest trophy bowls. I just wanted to advise the RAC that they might take a look at that and discuss on that so they don't hurt the herd. Thank you.
Thank you, Blake. Let's see, Allie, we'll give you a chance to come up. Allie Bywater, thank you.
Over the last few years, we've added new deer hunts like the muzzleloader hunt in November. And although I'm told that it wasn't going to be followed by a huge increase in the deer tag, and yet here we are with over 4,400 new tags being issued this year. Part of the reason adding the new hunt was to lower the number of hunters on the mountain. So in that aspect, how does it make sense to increase the tags? If we're trying to get people off of the mountain, hey, let's throw another 4,400 tags at it and kind of defeat what we're trying to do.
Okay.
Jeremy's question was how many bison will the tribe get? I think they've already talked about that.
I did the math, if you want it.
Well, that's if it's approved.
If the numbers are approved as presented for the Buck Cliffs unit-wide hunt, the tribe would get 2.1 bison permits, which is rounded to 2. For the wild horse bench portion of the hunt, which is a higher percentage of that, is exterior boundary land. It's all exterior boundary land for that hunt. Is 5.0, so 5 even. So that's what it would be if the numbers are approved as presented here. Tribe would get 2 for the unit-wide hunt, 5 for the wild horse bench hunt.
And then, my question to you would be, the corporate agreement we're trying to pass through the council is still a 50-50 split, right?
Yeah, that would be for bison that cross the river and leave the unit.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
John, what do you? John Larson.
It's good to be with you tonight, John Larson, with Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. I just want to take a minute again to thank Justin and the division team for the presentation that they put into this. They always do a great job. And I want to talk about the deer hunt just for a minute. Last year was an amazing year. It really was. I mean, to see the harvest percentage and to see the year in general. This is probably one of the best deer hunting seasons in 20 years. So on one hand, we really applaud the division and the state for the work that we've done and the conservation groups to rebuild our herds, because they're coming back. That's a big deal. To see harvest again like that and to create opportunity is an even bigger deal to me personally and our organization. We love to see that. So if you look at the state in totality, it's an amazing year again. But I still think you have to be somewhat surgical about where you increase and when you increase. It's got to make sense when and where. And so because of that, we certainly approved or accept the division's plan as presented, but we have just a couple exceptions, and one would be the manti, for sure. It's not necessarily, it doesn't really touch, it's not in your backyard in this neck of the woods, but it's the largest unit in the state, and it's still struggling in that particular area, and we're going to, I think we increased it 550, if I'm right. And so that's one area where we just ask you to take another look at that and make sure it's the right thing. If you draw a tag on that unit, you're from the north part of the state or the central part of the state or even the southern part of the state, it's a good thing, right? Again, it's the largest unit in the state, and you have to have opportunity there for everybody, for all the hunters we have in the state. But if you're from that area and that's where you hunt and that's where you live and that's what you see every day and you shed hunt there and you know it's hurting, that's a different story, and there might be some emotional tie there, but a lot of our sportsmen in that area are just really struggling with that level of increase. We'd ask you to take a look at that. The division's done a great job. I mean, that unit specifically has turned into, we put a lot of pressure on that to make it better. It's the newest area or unit that's now a recipient area of the Urban Mule Deer Program. Those deer that would be otherwise destroyed, now we're moving those deer, a number of them, to that unit as well to augment that natural reproduction. Those deer hopefully will make a difference there. It's under bounty protector. We've got coyote bounty going on there and predator control there. So we're doing the right things to get where it needs to be. We just ask that the permits stay the same this year. And then lastly, any bull permits, if we can go back to that slide, you don't even need to go back to the slide. It was easy. We're increasing the any bull to 15,000. The SFW supports that. Again, our elk are doing very well in this state, and so once again, it creates opportunity. And that's what we're all about. You have to protect that herd, but if your herd is growing and doing well, why not have that opportunity? In fact, we would ask the division to take a look at increasing the youth any bull to 800. Last year, it went from 200 to 500. We'd like to see that jump up and increase the youth tags to 800, so there's more opportunity for the youth. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Let's go with Jerry Slaw. Do you have comments for us?
Jerry Slaw with the Utah Bowman's Association. Thank you for your efforts with the proposals and the recommendations, and the Utah Bowman's Association supports the recommendations that the division has made for the permit numbers, and I think this is exactly what, when tags were cut years ago, it was to help the bucks survive so that there was a potential to be able to grow them more so we could hunt them have opportunity to hunt. And I'm in a situation now with my children where two of the four did not get to hunt deer last year, and so it's one of those situations where I would like to see them have the opportunity, and maybe one day they will grow into trophy status and prefer that, but at this time it was tough for them to miss out on their first opportunity to apply for a tag and not get one, and there's still that opportunity that they may not get to this year either, and the way the preference points are working. And I also feel that the increase is minimal enough with the overall statewide. There may be an extra $1,000 harvested throughout the state, so I think that will show good numbers next year on what this increase actually did for the objectives. So, thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Corey. Dale, we're going to hold you for last, so Tyrell will give you a chance to come up and give your comments.
Al kind of touched on what I wanted to, part of what I wanted to say. I mean, we added that November late season deer hunt to lower the number of rifle hunters on the mountain because it was just overwhelmed with some of these regions, like this North Slope Yellowstone and hell, even this Thermal unit. They're just way too many hunters, so that's part of the reason why we added that November hunt, and here we are adding 4,400 more tags, so it's kind of contradicting ourselves. We're going to end up with the same problem over again, with these mild winters we've had here the last few years, it's shown that less deer killed one year leads to a better hunting experience for everybody the next year. And I mean, like last year, we had the best hunt, or the best deer hunt this state's seen in years, not only with a higher success rate, but a higher maturity of bucks, of harvested bucks. And for years, we've been told that we got to choose. Either we can have a lot of deer or we can have big deer. And last year kind of contradicts that. We're finally working our way into a good area, and I think we ought to leave this alone for another year or two and see where it goes. Because we are really, we were finally doing good, and now it just kind of seems like the state wants to cash out on it. Because between this and the fabulous elk permits they end up giving out, I mean, that's a lot of revenue, yeah, but I think we ought to wait and see where this goes.
Thank you for coming up. Bill Brady.
You got 20 minutes?
Yeah, you've got a, he's got a...
You, I'll put on the timer.
Yeah. Provide us a letter, so I figured it might take a little bit of time.
I did give each of you a letter, including my name and each of your employees. I think without any reservation, I got a clause at DWR. Like from Director Sheehan down to each one of our biologists, Gail over here. Many of them I've known for many, many years and they're pretty people. And we've heard several comments tonight about last year's best hunt we had. Let me tell you, that started half a dozen, six, 8 years ago. There's a lot of people arguing at that point in time, but we're there, we're getting there. And we're now doing this subunits, and the biologist has done a fantastic job. What I gather is that the local biologists and Dax and Clint can help me. I think their recommendations are carrying a lot more weight than they have in the past. And that means the recommendations that the board gives, the RAC, is going to carry a lot more weight than what they have. That's just a compilation of options. So I really think that the DWR is going to apply. Thank you. Because they have done a heck of a job. We're students. Everybody I talk to, what's going on in the state office is fantastic. People we have. What I'm here just talking about not only Mount Landowners, and I've given you all a little handout. Some of it, the prelude, was written by one of the members that died in Mountain Landowners. Just to give you a little bit of background of what's going on up and down the mountain, how many acres, whatever, private and public, and whatever. And then I cut and pasted a lot of excerpts from the state Blood Mule Deer Plan and just identify some of the things I think we need to work on. Part of the plan says, and repeatedly says, and I'm just going to read this one section here on the first page of the bottom paragraph. It says, the guiding private plan for the deer population in Utah cannot be understated. Many critical or crucial mule deer habitats throughout the state are on private and owned lands. When I first moved here, I could go up to Diamond Mountain and hunt. For the general season back. That ended quite a few years ago. I haven't been there since. I've had a couple of landowners let me on the property. But I look at Joe because he saw me up there one year about 13 years ago, as a matter of fact. Now, the last time I was there, Joe. Programs of providing incentive to private landowners. Property for mule deer and other wildlife are critical to the state deer's management program. So all I'm saying is we've got to recognize private landowners have a big stake in this too. And we've got to work with them. And that's what I'm really here to say. I'm not going to take the time to read everything that I've got highlighted, which is you men and sisters to know what's going on. But read it yourself. It does talk about from the mule deer plan several different things. On the conclusion, I'm going to read that. It says, mule deer are the most abundant big game animal in Utah. They're high in the sportsman and on consumption usually. Is vital in the bottom paragraph, that middle section 5 conclusion, which is copied out of page 16 of the middle and 9 of the plan, says, is vital in the DWR state agencies and Native American tribes, federal agencies, conservation organizations, private landowners, and others work together to protect and improve the wilderness habitat. If we hope to maintain all that's happened, and part of what's got us to where we are today, you know, because there has been proper cooperation. I've seen in board meetings and RAC meetings where too many people come to this mic with a pistol in their hand, ready to shoot the first guy who goes off. I'm not of that opinion. I think we need to work together. And we can continue what's going on. The Diamond Mountain landowners, we saw on the screen, because of the buck-to-doe ratio, which is much higher than the top of the market, the plan says we got increased permits. We're going to send more deer hunters, as I mentioned. But that's what it says. So we went from 76 to 86 with the proposal, which is 10 permits. That means these landowners have got us deal with at least 10 more pickups up there. It's complicated. They got to work together. If it's in the plan, I don't know how we can get away with it. Bottom line, what I would like to see and they would like to see is that we do something with the management out there. I know the statute and the code, the way it is now, you can't do it. But the way the state mule deer plan says, please, time and time again, we're cooperating with each other. I was on the board when we changed the method. And I was on the Ponsiopi and the mountains. They didn't think that could happen, but then all of a sudden it did happen. I don't think the door should close on that sentence alone. We can work together, and if we want the landowners, one more quality, but there's still some good quality up there. It's not the Henry, it's not the Constance, but it's a really good unit. So I just would ask the board to consider what the landowners do. I'm not one of them. But that is at some point in time, get to these management hunts. If we're going to keep moving them up, I would recommend that that booth comes out of the management hunt rather than 2 or 4 years. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you,
Dale. Yeah, I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll be putting you on the spot. Maybe you're not the one to answer this. How many of the Diamond Mountain landowners have seen this and support it?
I've seen this
and support it.
Because they're not here tonight. They're going to be here.
Well, this is the first I've seen.
Yes.
And I'm a Diamond Mountain landowner.
That's right.
And I'm on the livestock operation. I said, you need to put you on the spot, but it's just curious to me because this is the first time I've seen
it. Well, we had a group of them together and Ash was with us a couple of weeks ago, and then they all, like cockroaches, when we put them on the watch.
That's all right.
Okay, any other comments? Because it's, this is your last chance to, as far as the public, to really provide any input towards this particular subject tonight. So there won't be any more questions or comments unless you're now's your time to give it or forever hold your peace. Yep. If you would step up the mic and if you would later give me one of these cards.
It's Mike Best, represent Sportsman. I see you're up in the tags on the bull elk, and I'm not a biologist, I don't think I'm a science, but one thing I could advise the DWR to do is maybe put a reserve on the size of bull elk in a Yellowstone unit to maybe a 4-point or better bull, so that we can get our breeding stock back. I know a lot of these people that are coming hunting up here out of the city and stuff, they're shooting the spikes and little bulls and stuff. And to me, opportunity is good, but quantity makes opportunity better. So if you draw a tag out of town and you come up here, you know, you got a chance to get a 4-point or a better bull, that's going to make you a little more excited going home if you did kill rather than a smaller bull. So I just advise the board to look at that and think about that. Like I said, I'm not a biologist, but I think it would sure definitely help with breeding stock and better genes and better producing bulls. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any other comments?
Yeah.
I think it is once we have further discussion. All right. Let's back to the RAC members now. So we have discussions. I think it's okay to ask questions. Brent, if you got a question?
I have a question for Clint.
Yes, sir.
I had no idea there were that many bison out there. That's my own ignorance. But I own bison and elk, and I know how much bison you eat. Are they having an impact on the range and competing with the elk herd? I mean, how are you supporting 300 bison without a resource issue out there?
You know, we try to manage everything as best we can and prepare for a lot. It wasn't just, you know, overnight that we decided to put 450 adult bison in the book list. I think if you look at the amount of habitat projects we've done alone in the book list, our Habitat Agency, I think, does more projects than the whole state combined. And that includes water developments, whether that's guzzlers,
springs. And I know there's been a lot of
bullhogs.
I guess my question is, when's that herd going to be managed to just stay at a given population instead of an age class?
Well, we have, according to the management plan, we have a population objective of 450 adults. And so we haven't quite hit that yet, but we are proposing, you know, here in probably 2017, we'll start having cow elk hunt or cow bison hunt out there to help manage the herd.
So you're just about there.
Like I say, and we try to monitor, and obviously, I mean, if you look at the water alone, a bison can drink. They've done some studies where, I mean, they can drink up to 50 gallons at one time. And so there is an impact there, and we're doing our best to monitor that and be proactive.
Discussion from the RAC.
I got one more question for Justin.
Okay. Come on.
Sorry.
No, you're fine.
In the Pontagon, we've seen the average age above 5 years decrease pretty drastically over the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Any leading factors as to what drove that?
Yeah, I think if you look at the data, I'd have to go back and look, but I think 63% of the bucks that were 5 years or older in 2013, I think that was the outlier. I think we've always kind of been closer to high 40s, low 50s on that. And so with 3 years of data, it does look pretty sharp, but I think that year was a spike, is what we're dealing with.
And has the success rate increased over the last 3 years?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it has increased. The success rates down there have been really good. What's interesting about the quality's been really good. What's really interesting is Randy Larson, he's a professor out of BYU. He cuts our teeth and ages them, and he tells me that some of the, and they do it blindly, but on CWMUs, on units like this, he tells me some of the biggest bucks that are harvested tend to be 4-year-olds. And so it's interesting because we always think older equates to better. Some of the, I mean, you look at the records in the West, a lot of these bucks were four when they were harvested. They weren't even five yet. And so, you know, we set that at five to ensure that there was quality there. Still really good bucks being harvested.
So with the high fence project along 89 down there, hoping to see an increase in deer survival, less mortality. Any thought why we haven't increased that buck to doe ratio in regards to that?
The buck to doe ratio?
Or the population, sorry. Is it reflected that?
Yeah, let me take a look at the population data real quick. I know the first year we put that fence up, there was deer. It took deer some time to learn about it. I'm sure you remember, deer used to congregate on that fence, and there was a lot of concern.
I was down there during the hump day.
Yeah. You know that. And as we've looked at the cameras under the underpasses and a lot of stuff, that's worked itself out. That's gotten much better. But I know that first year, there was a lot of concern when deer were piling up. Let me take a look real quick.
Sorry, we may cover in the next presentation.
Yeah, it's been pretty stable. Yeah, estimates haven't changed much. We were 52,000 in 2013, and last year we were 200. You know, I like to exaggerate that. We were 5,200 deer in 2013, and last year we were 5,400. So really, relatively stable. Yeah.
Okay,
thank you.
Other comments or questions for us?
Yeah, I've got a question for Dell. Dell, obviously there's a lot of good things going on Diamond Mountain. You know, deer herd in good shape, and you know, the public satisfied. But I guess I have a question about your concern about this 10 permit increase up there. And you mentioned part of the rationale was the landowners were going to have to deal with these extra hunters. Now, aren't the landowners already exempt from allowing the public on the private land?
Well, you know, I think they have their prerogative, but they do take a lot of public on the land.
But it's not, so they do take the public on kind of at their own discretion. You know, they're not like all the other landowner associations.
Careful to who are that on
the list. Or limited for units.
The people you allow on your property is not the ones that shoot your cows and break into your cabins and then kind of think that's where the extra pressure is.
Okay.
Another discussion for
I would like to see the numbers for the Manti, that Central Mountains Manti unit brought up and with Johnson's are about the increase on that, the Manti, was that
Yeah, so it's the second line down. That's the Central Mountains Manti Santa Fe unit. It's managed for 15 to 17 bucks per 100 does. 2013, we're at 19. 2014, 23, and this year we're at 23 bucks per 100 does again. So this is a unit where it's quite a bit higher in the past. And I was the wildlife manager down there on that unit when we went unit by unit, as was brought up earlier. And when we looked at it, we had over 12,000 hunters hunting that unit. But because our buck-to-doe ratios were low, we said, let's cut those permits and with fully intending to get a response to the buck-to-doe ratio. And I think you do that and combine those cuts with the favorable conditions we've had in growing deer and adding more bucks to the system year after year. Really, with this recommendation, we're just trying to get some of that opportunity back that was cut in 2012. So.
Justin, how many back? You might have another one. How many tags did we actually cut? You know, before we went to this settlement stuff.
Yeah, I don't have that off the top of my head. I do know in the early 2000s we were at about 97,000 permits, and I think it was about 2004 we dropped from 97,000 to 95,000. We rode 95,000 for many years in the state. And then when we started, I think 2010 was when we really had some hard winters. I could be off a year or two on that. But what happened was we cut permits pretty drastically. And then as we went unit by unit, there were additional cuts there. And so we went from 97,000 permits maybe 12 years ago to 84,000 permits a couple years ago. And so pretty good cuts throughout the state. Does that sound about right, guys? I'm trying to just remember.
Yeah, that's what I recall. The low was 84,000.
Yeah.
Which the high was 97,000. You know.
Yeah.
30,000. It went down there, but.
Yeah. And if you look.
You said now it's coming back.
And if you look, I mean, there were certainly years where cuts were warranted. I mean, we had, and there's no getting around that. We had years where buck-to-doe ratios were declining. We didn't like the trends. They were down there closer to 15. And it made sense to make those cuts because, as has been brought up several times, if we're below objectives, it's cut permits. I think we need to manage these objectives. And the last 4 years, though, we've seen an increase. And so I think it's time when times are good, let's give that opportunity back. So.
I have a question.
Sure.
I believe it was on the Yellowstone unit and maybe the South Slope.
For deer?
Yeah, for deer, okay. Sorry. One of them was barely meeting its objective, the bottom one, and still had 100 deer increase, and buck increase.
Yeah.
And the South Slope had the same at 20.9, so just maybe the difference, the buck-to-doe ratio is barely meeting the objective there. So why the same increase between the two? Just, I mean, if it's a habitat, is it pressure, what would be the reason
sure.
for that?
That takes that, Randall?
Remember, he talked about the weapon split that's occurring on the vernal. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that, it's got the 100% the permit increase on the bonanza vernal right there. Most of those are going to go into archery and muzzleloader cat. They aren't going into the rifle at all. There's no increase to rifle, which has a very high success rate. So it's actually, we expect to see a smaller rut increase in harvest. And yet, harvest, the jump in trend, as you look at that, and that South Slope Bonanza, as you look at it, which is barely making it in that lower category. That's because look back to 2013, that 13 really pulls down to 17, 18. The trend is going way up on that one. That was the unit two that had the 70% success on the rifle hunt. That's almost Book Cliff's level, limit entry level success rates. You know, the Myrtle's a trophy unit in that sense as far as success rates go. We've got trophy deer. So the success rate is what we've been doing in the past is cutting tags, and still killing just as many deer with less and less people and taking away opportunity away. And those kind of things. The Yellowstone there, you know, making it to 21.9, this age is very makes objective, but its objective really should be about 19, right? Between 18 to 20 should be there in between. So they both are basically, you know, the Yellowstone's over objective by at least a full one on the objective there, with good sample sizes on those kind of things too. Another thing to keep in mind, I think, on this deal, this is just an opinion thing. You know, deer, all it takes is one hard winter, and we lose a lot of these deer. We've had three or four good years in a row. We've built deer. We probably ought to take advantage and get the opportunity while we can before we have another Uinta Basin winter that takes out a lot of these and we lose them. Increasing them by 3% or something like that, like these are, it's probably not a real significant, dramatic, you know, jump.
Yeah. Randall, along those lines, I know we generally don't ask other biologists questions. Years ago, didn't we make some pretty good cuts in the Northeast region? I remember a year we cut like 4,000 permits or something.
The Northeast region was the one reason we cut them on a regional level before we went to unit by
yeah.
unit. We did a couple of years in a row of taking over 1,000 tags each just off the regional cap before we even went into the breaking down by unit where we took additional tags.
Okay, I want to make sure I remember that.
So we are
wasn't.
Let me show you my ignorance, but what's the average age, what's the lifespan of a mule deer?
Well, yeah, it depends. Females can be up around 10 to 13, right in there. It varies regionally. Bucks, they can be closer to 10, 11, 12 in some cases. The bucks are interesting because they peak, they have, you know, high quality life, and then they start to decline on antler production and body condition scores and size and some of that, but yeah, it's like 10 to 13 on deer in most cases.
Okay, thank you.
So, if I recall, 2013 is when we changed the vernal south slope from the 12 to 13 buck per doe ratio, and it actually increased it to 15 to 17. Is that right? Was that 2013?
I think for general season in the last plan, the units could be 15 to 17 or 18 to 20. I don't know if we ever had an objective that was 12 to 13, but I think our buck to doe ratio was 12 to 13. So we were under, which is really what was driving those permit cuts. And the interesting thing is we'd look at the data every year, we'd say, we harvested the same amount of buck with fewer hunters. And so we realized we oftentimes the division gets asked to think outside the box, and on these weapon splits, it's certainly a little different, but it's a way to provide that opportunity and not have to keep cutting, and it's a good unit to hunt. So.
Other discussion? Entertain a motion or sub-motion, or not a sub-motion, but if anybody has one particular thing that they don't, or they want to see changed, or one or two different things they want to see changed from the division presentation, now's a good time to talk about it and make a motion on it.
I'll make a motion. I'll make a motion that we accept the division's recommendations as they're presented today.
And we have a motion of
Kevin. I'll second it.
And that was David made the second. Jerry made the motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
And so it's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 4 against. We got 2 abstentions back there? Okay.
Can you say why?
2 abstain.
Why?
Tim, why did you abstain?
I just don't agree with the increase on the elk. And, you know, I see our deer doing good for 1 year, and then all of a sudden, we want to go and kill them. I can't agree with that.
Okay, and Mitch?
Well, it's kind of a blanket motion, and I see issues in different areas that could be able to separate in each area. So. I'm just not a blanket issue type guy. There were some good points brought up tonight in different areas, and this motion I just don't think I'll
put it against the. Okay, thank you. All right, next topic is our animal permit recommendations of Shannon's still the hot dog.
I've been called a word. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tonight, I'm going to present the antlerless recommendations for 2016. To begin, we'll start with deer again. This is a slide you saw in the last presentation. Again, the thing I really want to point out is the last 7 years where our fawn to doe ratios have been above 60, that in the West, in Utah in particular, that really lends itself to population growth if other factors add up. This is really what is the beginning stages of population growth is good production. This is probably one of my favorite slides to present. This is our statewide survival rate information. As you well know, what we do in many pockets of the state is we go and we radio collar adult does and female fawns, and we monitor their survival rates over a one-year period. So as you can see, the yellow line is the adult survival rate, and it's been between 86 and 84% over the last 6 years. This last year, it dipped just a little bit. I think we were closer to 83, but that's average for the West. That's pretty good. If you can be in that range, it means good things for your deer population. The fawn survival, the first 2 years we were just over 50%, and that's actually a little bit above average, if you can believe that. It was brought up earlier, do we account for deer dying and recommendations, and how does that work? Certainly. I mean, we recognize that adults are going to die every year naturally, and fawns are as well. But if you look at the last 4 years, 2012 to 2015, our fawn survival has been around 80%, and that has been remarkable, and that has really precipitated a lot of population growth throughout the state. So as you can see, is a fun graph to show. It's really where our populations have been and what they're doing in the last 20, 25 years. Early 90s, a lot of division people, a lot of sportsmen remember that we had some hard years. We lost deer. We kind of climbed out of it, fell back to, I mean, anybody that studies mule deer populations know that they peak and valley, and Utah is really no different. They fluctuate. And right now, we are certainly riding a wave of increase where we estimate we've grown nearly 100,000 deer in the last 4 years, and that has been remarkable. I remember, as we presented the slide in the past, we kind of had the short-term objective for 350,000. You guys remember that as this has been presented? And there was a lot of hope that we would get there one day, and it's really been great to see this population increase on the landscape. One other change in this slide, in the past, the population objective has been about 425,000. Some unit plans were revised in the southern and southeast regions last year, and with that, we were over objective on some areas, and as a result, we went and looked at the habitat, we looked at the deer, we looked at the body condition scores, and we raised objectives in many areas of the state because it could handle it. Moving on to antlerless deer permits, public draw. This graph just kind of shows where we've been over the last 7 years or so. We talked about that hard year in 2010, 2011. We really scaled back on antlerless permits. And now, for this year, we're recommending 755, or a slight increase from last year. These antlerless permits for deer are designed to address depredation or rangeland concerns. We're recommending a new hunt on the Zion, Northwest Zion, which is where the bulk of the increases are occurring, and then a slight increase on the Pine Valley as well to address some deer that are causing some landowners undue burden down there. Also, we're recommending some boundary changes on the Circleville North and Circleville South areas. Moving on to elk, statewide population trends. We've grown some elk, I'd say over the last 7-8 years or so. Our elk population went from under 70,000 to over 80,000 fairly quickly. And the last few years, biologists have been really surgical and specific on their hunt recommendations and has seen some increased harvest and drawn that back down a little bit. Our population objective is just shy of 71,000. And this year, we estimate we're just over 79,000 elk in the state. In December 2015, the Wildlife Board approved a new statewide elk plan and big game rule. One of the purposes of this revision was to provide more tools to make progress towards population objectives. We're over objective in the state, and we needed more options. One of the things that was passed in December, so this isn't necessarily for a debate tonight, but this is moving forward. This is already in place for this fall. In the past, hunters could obtain two elk permits, either a cow or a bull, or two cow permits. And now hunters may obtain three permits annually, as follows: a maximum of one bull permit, a maximum of one antlerless permit obtained in a public draw, and then a maximum of two antlerless over-the-counter permits. The statewide plan really encourages more over-the-counter hunting opportunity. For cow elk, in particular areas that we're trying to strive to make progress towards the objective. So types of permits, public draw, this is what RACs and the public are used to seeing. They're part of the tables that are sent out with the boundary and season dates and permits. Pretty status quo. And then over the counter, we have our antlerless elk control permits. Again, this is if a hunter is out in the field and they have a buck, bull, or once-in-a-lifetime permit, they can obtain a cow elk permit and take one antlerless elk using the same weapon type during the same season dates and areas of overlap between their buck bull once in a lifetime permit and their antlerless elk control permit. And then for the first time this year, we're recommending private lands only permits. This is part of the last statewide plan that was passed in December. As the elk committee met several times last summer and hammered through areas that we can improve with elk management throughout the state, one of the things was getting harvest in areas of refuge where elk are at and providing landowners more tools, more options. So these permits that we're recommending tonight, they're going to be valid on private property, from August 1st to January 31st on select units using any weapon. And hunters must obtain written permission from landowners prior to engaging in hunting activities on private property. And the way these would work is if they're set for a given unit, the public can go obtain them, whether it's from our division office or Walmart or wherever, and they can hunt any private property with some exceptions, which we'll get to, but no restrictions. So it's not like a CWU program, but these are available to public hunters. So moving on to public draw. This is kind of what permits have done over the last few years. We've increased. We learned some things. It's been really good to meet with the biologist and say, we increased permits in some of these units, but we didn't really increase harvest. And so really hats off to the biologists and managers for thinking through how to use public draw permits and be more precise on these units that they have. Last year, our success rates were almost 45% on these cow elk hunts, which is really quite good for close to 15,000 permits. This year, we're recommending a slight decrease to 13,680. Again, breaking it up by region, northern region, units are there on the far left. Population objective is the second column for the region and individual units. Population estimate there in the third column. As you can see, the bulk of where we're over objective in the state is probably those northern region units. Last year's permits, and then what we're recommending tonight. So in the northern region, recommending increases in several of those units, except for the Chalk Creek and the Box Elder, where we're recommending reductions, and no change on Morgan South Ridge and East Canyon. Also, we're proposing new hunts for Box Elder East and Cache Ridge. For the central region, recommending decreases in permits from 430 to 270. The bulk of those occurring on the Wasatch Mountains West and the Oker Stands areas, and a slight increase on the Nebo. Recommending some new hunts on Central Mountains Ephraim and Milburn areas, and some name changes on the West Desert Ibapah and Wasatch Mountains West Kempinogas areas. For the southern region, quite a bit of movement. We just surveyed almost every one of these units down there for our elk flights. And some units are over and some units are under. And so we're proposing increases on the Fillmore, Beaver, Pontagat, and Pinguish Lake units, and decreases on Monroe, Mount Dutton, Fish Lake, Thousand Lakes, and Boulder Caparois, and a decrease of nearly 500 permits in that region. Lots of changes going on. New hunts and boundary changes are being proposed on the Southwest Desert and the Southwest Desert Northwest part. New hunts being proposed on the Fillmore Pavant, Beaver East, Pinguish Lake, Markagut Plateau, Sandy Creek, and Ponsagon, and some boundary changes on Kasharon Valley, Fish Lake, Thousand Lakes East, Boulder East, and Boulder West. For the Southeast region, a slight decrease in permits from 3,405 to 3,140. Those reductions being proposed on the San Juan and Nine Mile Range Creek. In addition to that, recommend a new hunt on the Central Mountains Barren Canyon East and boundary changes on the Moreland Stump Flat and the San Juan units. For the Northeast region, I'll leave this up for a minute. We're recommending an increase in permits on the 9 Mile Anthro from 325 to 400, and decreases on every other unit except for the West Daggett and the Aviniquin unit. Region-wide, a reduction from 3,990 to 3,175. Also, we're recommending a new hunt on the South Slope Mosby Mountain, and a correction in the rack packet. In your rack packet, there's a hunt proposed called the Book Cliffs, Bitter Creek, and the Cook Ridge. And the hunt should have been Book Cliffs, Bitter Creek East, and I apologize for that. Moving on to over-the-counter permits, we recommend discontinuing antlerless elk control permits on the Wasatch Mountains and Mount Dutton units. And then we recommend antlerless elk control permits on the following 11 units. These 11 units, without exception, every one of them was an antlerless elk control unit last year. And so really not much change except for some reductions on the Wasatch Mountains and Mount Dutton areas. And then we also recommend 12,010 private land only permits on 15 units. Let's see, for over-the-counter permits, Antlers subcontrol are highlighted there in yellow. As areas like the Wasatch had increased in the past in popularity, we saw an influx in antlers subcontrol hunters in this unit. And by taking that off the table, I would say close to half of our hunters were on units like this and not done. So I don't know how many we're going to have this next year. I put a star by 4,000. It will be a reduction, but I have no way of knowing who's going to buy. But in addition to that, 12,010 private lands only permits are being offered. These private lands only permits, they don't apply to the federal, state, Sitla County, or municipality lands. They don't apply to tribal lands, lands enrolled in an CWMU, or lands where public access for big game hunting has been secured, like a walk-in access property. The units where these private lands only permits are being proposed are on the far left, and the number of permits on the far right of that table. Some to highlight, the Wasatch Mountains West, Current Creek, and Abinaquin. Between those units, we're recommending close to 6,500 permits. South Slope, Yellowstone, 3,000 permits. And really what we're trying to do, we have a lot of information now where we started this elk collar study on the Wasatch and some of the surrounding units. And it's been interesting. As the hunts start up, elk are fairly well distributed on public and private lands. But come October, in the middle of the hunts, the spike hunt's been going, antlers elk control, what we've seen is these, I would say we have twice as many elk on private lands versus public lands based on radio collar data, even though we have twice as much public land as we do private. So there's really a lack of alignment in the distribution of elk on these units. And so what we're trying to do with these private lands only permits is get hunting pressure on areas where elk are seeking refuge and back off on some of the public land areas. And so we get hunting pressure and harvest in those areas to bring back elk onto the public land. I don't know if we solved this overnight. Retraining elk is difficult, but I think it's a first step, and I think it's something that it is a new tool and it's different, and we're eager to try it. Down the road, I think public hunters on the Wasatch will benefit by thinking proactively and trying stuff like this tonight. So in summary, overall, we're recommending an increase in total antlers elk permits for this fall. However, we are recommending a decrease in public draw permits, a decrease in the number of antlers elk control units being proposed, and we're recommending private lands only permits for the first time to increase harvest and hunting pressure on private lands. Moving on to doe pronghorn, recommend a decrease in permits from 844 to 630. These reductions are being proposed for the Cash Morgan Southridge Ogden units, the North Slope Lucerne Point, and the Parker Mountain Plateau, and then increases on Southwest Desert Milford Flat and Centerville North and the Box Elder Snellville area. New hunts being proposed on Box Elder Snellville, Centerville, North Cleveland, and the Southwest Desert Milford Flat, and some name changes on Mount Dutton, Johns Valley, and Plateau Parker Mountain. Another one that we're excited about as an agency is to recommend antlers moose hunts for the first time since 2011. We've done some surveys, we've looked at some of these populations, done some studies and monitoring, and we have pockets of the state where moose are doing well. And on the Ogden and East Canyon areas, they're at or exceeding their population objectives, and so we want to provide some additional moose hunting opportunities there. So these new hunts are on the East Canyon, Davis, North Salt Lake, and Morgan Summit, and the Ogden and Ogden West. And that's all I have. And again, as we get into questions, admittedly, I don't know some of these units as well as the biologists. So if it's a unit-specific question, we've got great people to answer. And if it's more statewide, I'm happy to help where I can. So thank you.
Thank you. I've got one question that came out of the board meeting last spring. They approved several hundred antlers permits for the area down there, Wayne County and a few of those other counties down there. How beneficial or how detrimental was that to that herd down there?
Yeah, I was at that. I think at that meeting, a lot of that conversation was the Southwest Desert. Is that what you're referring to, or are you talking other units as well?
I tell you the truth, I just don't know. I'm not sure.
Okay.
What they were in, but I know there was a county commissioners there and some landowners and stuff was there that really wanted was afraid of the drought and and it was going to, they did get approved to hold up several hundred cows.
Yeah, the one where those approvals took place, if I remember, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Southwest Desert is where the bulk of that discussion was occurring. And if we go back, Southwest Desert's an interesting one.
Mount Dutton as well.
Was Mount Dutton on as well? Yeah, and that's one where we had antler self-control put on that as well. So, I mean, Southwest Desert, there at the top, we just flew this population, and we were over. We were 1,550 elk was our population estimate. And it was a hard survey to interpret because Nevada did their survey as well, and their elk were way down. And we saw a major influx of elk, and we were looking at it, and as you map the locations, a heavy percentage of these were within 5 miles of the border. And that's just a challenge. It's not an excuse, but it's a challenge to manage elk.
You can't tell the difference between you and that elk.
You know, I don't get it. I mean, the greasewood on our side is so much more palatable.
You look for the 777 along the side.
Is that what it is? Yeah. Yeah. So we've got some education. Certainly with the flight data, we saw what we saw. We were over. And so we're actually sticking with the 600 permits that the Wildlife Board approved last year. So we didn't reduce that.
I'm out of order, but how's that gone over in the other acts?
It was fine. I think, you know, the southern part of the state, we have spent a lot of time meeting with permittees and landowners we had some great discussions in that raft, and I think a lot of people, I mean, if you look at this, where we're over, we're getting aggressive. Like Beaver, 235 to 880, we're really trying to make progress. In areas that we're under, we're making cuts. I mean, I just think we're trying to be as responsible with cow elk as we can.
Thank you. Other questions from Daniel?
So above cliffs, we had a decrease in analyst permits. However, we're still under objective. Is that hunt more focused on a specific area in that unit, or why would we entertain analyst hunts when we're below objective?
Okay. Sure. You know, we found with our color studies, especially on the Wasatch, the elk are very responsive to hunting pressure. And so the book lists, we have a relatively small portion of the unit that we focus these cow elk hunts on. One of them is the roadless area, and we only give out 30 permits for that. And it helps kind of move the elk around the landscape a little bit. And the other one involves a lot of that burn on McCook Ridge, Rector Ridge, that new burn, all that Atchie burn. And so it kind of helps move those elk around that winter range. And giving out 120 antlerless permits on that unit isn't driving it, you know, down necessarily, but it's helping us manage the landscape, like Brett brought up earlier, you know, with the bison issue out there. We're constantly, you know, trying to manage the landscape, and hunting pressure is a great tool.
So our trend on that population estimate, how's it been for the last couple of years? Is it,
you know, it's been climbing. I think we have more elk here than we have the last at least 8 years that I've been out here. And it's still, you know, not as explosive as other herds like the Wasatch or some of the South Slope herds. But it's steadily growing, steadily increasing according to our models and accounts.
Thank you.
Doesn't that coincide with you taking over and Dax leaving?
You know, I think I have a lot of numbers, but now that I've cut my hair, I worry.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Tim.
I got a question for you. I'll take them.
I just have the helicopter first, so instead of my... Okay.
Take them from Arcadia,
you know, haul them
down there. That's what we plan on doing.
Yeah, sure. Right,
she's got a question. Okay, Justin Moses from Cumming. Can you go to the private lands, please?
This slide here?
Yeah, that one's fine.
Okay.
Are we headed for a rec, having the opening of a rifle hunt on August 1st when we have calves that are 8 or 9 weeks old?
Yeah, I actually think that's a very thoughtful question. We looked at that when we started saying, how early can cow elk legitimately be harvested? And I'm glad it was brought up. We did a lot of research into that and looking. I called the deer and elk coordinator out of Idaho. They've had private lands only permits in Idaho for about 7 years now. And I asked them this very question. If you harvest cows, is that orphan calves? And he said they haven't seen that. And they have landowners that have gotten very aggressive with cow elk and agricultural fields and others. And they haven't seen that. He said, you know, generally after 2 months, these calves are 100, 110 pounds, really good size. And we did some digging as well. And, peak milk production for cow elk, in the things that we were looking at, 50 to 60 days, and then it starts to decline. And a lot of these elk have a pre-rut weaning about the 1st of September, and where they're actively minimizing milk and production and some of those things. So I'm glad the question was brought up earlier, because it forced us to think through it and say, yeah, how good a decision is this? And I would commit to this. If we're seeing things in Utah that's different than Idaho, we can certainly look at those season dates down the road.
Well, the problem is you won't see it. And they'll just, for every one you shoot, you'll lose a calf.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a 6 week, seven, the younger calves, which are going to be born June 10th,
mm-hmm.
June 15th, you know, they have no chance.
Well,
you're talking 6-7 weeks old.
Yeah.
The oldest ones, you know, born mid-May, maybe you have a slight chance. But there's a big difference between August 1st and September 1st. You know, when you start talking weaning, the elk ranchers, we wean them right after Labor Day, and they tend to thrive. But if you have bummer calves, you know, 8 weeks, you can't wean them at 8 weeks, because they can't. I wouldn't say they just go starving yet.
Right.
But they don't thrive, and they're not going to make it through the winter. And they're spotted calves, and if you have a public perception. You know, I really think starting that on August 15th would achieve the same goal, and maybe not have the potential for a real public relations.
Right. Again, great concerns. I'm glad we're talking about it. Behaviorally, elk are interesting because they're a herd animal, and they're grouped up in families in many cases. There is literature out there that says if a mom dies, then the calf can suckle on another cow, and vice versa. We have cows that lose calves, and many of these calves are indiscriminate when it comes to nursing. And so,
they do not thrive, and they probably go into the winter in marginal condition anyway. You probably still lose a much higher percentage than you would. With a mother calf.
It's certainly a concern for us. I would end with this. The last one nice thing about it is a lot of hunters, and even when we've had to do depredation hunts and things like that, because we've had to go remove elk in early August. We've had to go remove elk earlier than
that. Well, that's what this is a depredation hunt. I mean,
certainly. I mean, yeah.
Honestly, that's what this is.
I think it's kind of a hybrid between that public draw and land. But I mean, it's thinking differently. But you know, generally what we've seen though is the distribution of elk. Really, there's always elk on private lands in every unit. But really, the heavy shift comes when these hunts start in October and things like that. So will some elk get harvested in August? Certainly. And we've had to do it as well. There's no getting around it. We'd much rather give that opportunity to the public and the landowners and work through some of that than have to do division removal. But again, our guess is that the bulk of the harvest is going to occur when these public land hunts start and elk are seeking refuge on private lands, and private landowners are saying, this is a little too much for me to tolerate. I need some harvest.
Except in the South Slope, I think I'd agree.
Okay.
South Slope, Yellowstone, I would tend to agree with that.
With the tribal land issue,
always
Randall,
you do, yeah. But what do you? I mean, 3,000 tags. I don't know. Are you gonna get a few hundred or a thousand of them that first week?
I think because it's limited into private, and the landowners are gonna really control how many people can hunt anyway. Dramatically, you know, we've seen that on other similar situations with different species, turkeys or other things. I mean, I would think
landowners are going to regulate that anyway a little bit. And yeah, we may have a, I would be surprised if we had one a few hundred. Well, that, you know, ballot actually hunting in early August, honestly. I think a lot of these tags, the reason we set that number high to 3,000, that may sound like a lot, we want to make sure they didn't sell out, because we want to make sure there are tags available in January, mid-January, when we have a herd of elk move on to somebody's private property and they don't want them there. But this is a good way to be able to do that. So only folks who should ever buy one of these is those who have written permission and authorization already to go onto someone's private property. I agree, Greg. Yeah, like we talked, I think there could be several hundred, you know, a couple hundred that pretty honest that are out there hunting potentially. I don't think there's several hundred cows going to be shot by any. These are going to be very, very low success tags, actually.
And I know we're late, and I don't want to take up all the time on that issue, but I think the desire to reduce the numbers has exceeded the science in this case. And that's where I'll probably let it go. Okay.
My question is then, is those season dates, so those permits are valid from August 1st through the entire season?
Through January 31st, correct. Yep.
So, with that said, these areas where we've had these private land-only permits, is that, are those areas where the states had to fund landowners due to crop damages, property damage, things like that, or is it just to push the elk off and increase opportunity?
I think it's full. I mean, for many years we heard, like on units like the Wasatch, public hunters are saying, I've hunted, and you don't have the elk you say you have. And then we go and we survey, and we count the elk, and we say, well, yes, we do. And who's right? I mean, certainly the elk we counted were there, but also the public is right, because they went out and hunted, and the elk that they expected to see are hung up on refuge areas, on private lands, and we have the color data to show that now. And it's been really good to work with the Wasatch Elk Committee and many concerned sportsmen and landowners and others on this type of issue, and come together and to drop our pride and say, where can we improve? How can we do better? What tools do we need? And so I think it's been fantastic to try this, and it's been well received. And if we can improve upon it in the future, we will, but this is just the introduction. We're just really trying to get it rolling.
Any questions about that?
Yeah, I do. These permits are strictly going to be sold to the hunter, not to the landowner.
Yeah, to clarify, if I'm a landowner,
yeah.
I could buy one and harvest one. I could buy up to two because of the new rule change. But they're not like the vouchers and things like that. It's not like those CWME or depredation things. It's really about public hunters and private landowners.
So if a hunter buys one and he wants to hunt a prospective piece of property that the elk are coming into, the landowner is free to charge him a trespass fee.
Sure. Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah,
which is probably what will happen in West Daggett.
I think there's pockets that will happen. It's hard to say on how that would all shake out, but certainly we wouldn't get in the middle of that by any means.
I guess it's just free enterprise that way. So,
So Justin, how has this gone over? This date's name is August 1st or August 15th, how has it gone over in the other regions?
Has
there been this kind of discussion and concern, and was August 1st approved?
Yeah, August 1st has been approved in every one. But with that said, it's a great concern. I love that it was brought up, and it's forced Randall and I to have some really good conversations and to think through it. And we're committed to monitoring and seeing if there's negative effects, and you know, our friends in other states that have tried this, they just haven't seen it. They haven't been able to document it. So.
I'll ask you a question, Joe. I don't need to put you on the spot. You don't need to answer if you don't want to. Do you think this would help you? I know you've had problems with elk down your place.
When you talked about training elk, those down there are trained really well. They're very nocturnal.
And so they would.
The general hunt rules.
So they would move off. They wouldn't stay on your land. Or
they don't stay. They
come in during what, the night?
Mm-hmm.
they come in at night.
Yeah. There are avenues to deal with that as well. I mean, with some of the depredation permits and things, there's been buffers in the past. I don't know how much that's been used, but there's other options.
Other questions for Rob?
I got one more. I may get lynched in the parking lot after this question, but let's talk about Diamond Mountain. So they're issued private land only permits to the landowner. Does those type of circumstances apply in these other units as well, on top of these permits?
Go ahead, Jack.
Let me clarify here. So, and I know in the RAC packet there was an asterisk. In here, it's just the South Slope Bonanza Vernal. On the other one, it says Diamond Bonanza Vernal, but there's an asterisk. But Diamond Mountain is not included in the public land or private lands only annulus permits. It would just be the Vernal and the Bonanza.
Sure, and that, sorry, maybe I didn't direct that question very good, but I know on Diamond, the landowners get issued private land only annulus permits, vouchers.
They get depredation vouchers, yes.
Correct. So does that still happen on these other units that are listed here as well?
Yes.
Yes. This isn't intended to replace any of those. This is just to add an additional tool. That's all it is. I think in some cases, private landowners may not have to come into the division and show land ownership and some of that. They may just go get these and solve problems on their own without the depredation vouchers and permits. But those are still on the table for private landowners.
Justin, can I just say,
sure.
I actually hope that they do streamline the process for landowners that are currently being issued, you know, depredation vouchers. Instead of having to come and meet with us and fill out the paperwork, you know, if they're having crop damage, that they can just, you know, choose family or friends or people they know or people that are charging the trespass fee and have those people go pick up the permits and get money. Instead of having to wait for a week to fill out the paperwork and have us process it, print permits, vouchers, mail them to them. So I'm hoping that in some situations this will replace that. But if, for example, these run out, you know, then we still have the ability to issue depredation permits specifically to landowners. Or if there are landowners that are seeking their, you know, their free landowner mitigation permits, they still can go through the process and fill out a damage plan and go through that. But I'm hoping this streamlines the process and gives landowners that are experiencing damage a quicker tool to be able to address that.
So you led to that question. Why wouldn't they be included? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, the vouchers are a late season voucher when the elk are already in migration phase, so to speak, where they're trying to move off the mountain and get lower, get to the warmer areas and stuff, but or they're calving, and where you're going to find them these times of year is right on the private property. Is that, were their inputs considered in this and they didn't want to participate? Or?
Are you speaking to Diamond again?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so on Diamond Mountain, we haven't had any complaints about the way the antlerless permits are issued. Mm-hmm. And they have a long season window on their permits for their antlerless mitigation vouchers. They can fill them up, they can redeem them and go early, or they can do it later. It's kind of up to them. Tried to give a lot of flexibility to landowners there on Diamond. There are still some public lands, public draw permits too, that people can draw and hunt on the public lands part or on private, they had permission on Diamond Mountain.
Okay,
yeah,
that's all I had.
Well, on Diamond, what we do is we have a management plan. Mm-hmm. We can't see how many elk we got, and so we try to stick to our management plan, and it's been a good plan. And I'll walk that down to LRA. I'm not going to take my hat off to the fishing team because Morgan and these guys, the last 2 or 3 years, have done a heck of a job for us.
So
they really went out of the way and helped us down. So but on Diamond, we manage. We count and we manage. Landowners get together. That is managed out there. Now, when the elk come off the unit, brush picking different stuff, then that's where this applies and comes in.
So as a whole, the landowners up there, they're not complaining about the number of elk?
No, because they get in and manage the wildlife up there.
So it's a good thing they're not included in this because it's...
Well, it wouldn't work because we manage and put our numbers together.
Okay.
This works mainly for guys like us on Brush Creek where they just come in and we just single individual operators out there. We've got no management plan. Maybe if all the Brush Creek people got together, they'd put some kind of stuff together. Mm-hmm. We're all individuals. This is where this is about.
Okay.
And I want everybody to be aware that if we got bad depredation, everything we try isn't working. It's in the code that all we got to do is give a kill notice. And we can kill them as long as you have more than these guys can pick them up. We don't want that. You guys don't want that? We don't want that. So any tools the fish and game will give us are welcome. And they have really done an outstanding... She did come down, it was 3 years ago, come out, was doing a drive down there through that wet day, corn. All these guys showed up and come down. I mean, it was great. And Morg just bent over backwards for us. So... It's another tool, and it's not like a good tool. We don't want to use our cable tool.
Sure, sure.
That's, you know. Anyway, that's my insight.
Oh, that's good. Good insight.
Other questions from the rack? Okay, questions from the public, please. Yep. Go ahead and start up down from back there.
Tyrell, A. Bacon. With this management plan, I mean, yeah, it's a good idea. I'm just afraid that the August to January is a little bit much because with that, these elk are going to be being pushed from the 1st of August until the middle of May or June with all the shed hunters. I mean, you've had shed hunters up on the mountain since January. We've had four-wheelers all over down canyons and whatnot up on Dry Gulch and up on Joni Star Flat. We found nets that they put up about 4 or 5 feet off the ground across the trees, trying to push those elk down the canyons. Is there any way that we can do like something like what the tribe does and not let us start shed hunting until the 1st of May to kind of take some of this pressure off? Because with this plan, those elk are only going to have 2 months without any pressure. And from January till right now is the hardest time of the winter for them because those calves and the cows are getting bigger and growing and they're just, with this, there's going to be too much pressure. Is there anything else we can do, either take it till September or... lengthen out the, or shorten the shed hunting? What can we do there?
Yeah, so with the shed antler gathering, years ago we swung the pendulum to where we stopped shed antler gathering in some areas of the state, and it was nearly impossible to enforce. I know Wyoming has seasons, and some of those guys throw their hands up and say it is so difficult to enforce some of this. What we've tried to do is the education around with the shed antler gathering course on ethics and things like that. But I think the one thing that people forget on the shed antler gathering season is if you're observing this and you're seeing people harass wildlife and they're pushing elk and doing some of this and it's purposeful and it's harassment, let us know because we already have rules on the books. We have laws on the books that allow us to cite those individuals. I mean, is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I mean, there's a lot of times where I push the public to, hey, you know, you see something, just get a hold of us. They tell us all the time, we've seen this, but if we don't get a call, we can't do anything.
Well, I mean, like I say, up there on Johnny Star Flat, Dry Gulch, Yellowstone Canyon, we found 4 or 5 different nets that people have been putting in these draws, and you can see where they went up and then tried pushing the elk down into there, trying to rip the horns off of them.
Well, let's chat.
And we've called it in, but we don't know if there's been anything come out of
it.
Like I said, we've turned these in, and just like down there in 9 Mile, we've been doing lion hunting down there this winter, and just since about the middle of January, you've got snowmobile tracks down every canyon, down everything, just pushing them, just trying to, and that's a lot of pressure. And then with this right here added on to it, because you've got a lot of that private land where we're going to be pushing them off the private land back onto the forest or the BLM. And you got the shed hunters pushing them even harder. So,
but help us be successful then. If you're seeing this, if your friends are seeing this, let us know. I mean,
I've thought about, you know, getting license plates or whatever else, but those people, it's just like with you game wardens. Your guys' lives are on the line every time you go up to somebody. If they know they're breaking the law, they don't want to get caught with it. And I don't want to get shot after that.
But yeah.
Well, that's where you just keep the distance, be able to just document what you see. Tell us what type of truck it is, tell us where they're at, and then you can follow from a distance if you like. Get involved as much as you want and be safe about it.
Well, like I said, like we have turned the nets in and whatnot, but we didn't know what else to do other than that. Because we don't know who put them up there. We can just see the trails that they've been using.
Sure.
Yeah. So I've personally been really working shed hunters this year because I hate when people drive across the land on four wheelers and stuff like that. And so I've actually been out talking to a lot of them. And there is people driving across the land, and I've noted those spots in heavy areas. And it's been down Wells Draw, all both sides of Wells Draw, clear to Indian Canyon, down 9 Mile Canyon. But on the good note, I bet probably 99.9% for people I've talked to have their certificate. But like I said, there it only takes a few to make it a bad deal. So, but like what Justin was saying, a lot of other states have a hard time. I mean, you take shed hunting away from one. The people who are going to do it illegally are going to do it illegally anyways. They're going to take it away from them.
Even honest man.
But the best way, honestly, is with the public giving us a call. I mean, several times I've had people call me, and I've been able to get down there, and they just, with their binoculars, got a license plate number, that right there, and a small detail. It's probably the best tool we have to combating that.
So. There's just a lot of hunting pressure, and we got it. That's only leaving 2 months really to have their tabs and ordinance up to where.
Thank you,
Blake. Yeah, Blake Bess, Justin. Let's talk about them cow moose permits.
Sure.
What's your reasoning on this?
Yeah, the reasoning is because on these units we're either at or exceeding the population objective. And it's interesting. I've been up on these units, and in particular in the Ogden and even parts of the cache. I think we're not too far out on the cache as well. Some of our mahogany is getting highlined, which isn't good. And also we're seeing a lot of moose come into town. And on the Wasatch Front, in these areas, when you start having many, many moose show up all throughout spring and winter and even during some of the summer and fall months, and it starts amping up at a pretty good pace, it's generally a good indication that these moose are getting kicked off, populations are expanding, and that in conjunction with the survey data that we've got that shows how many are there, it's just a way to give some opportunity back to the public and control some populations.
Have you guys took any consideration, like, say, for the South Slope Yellowstone unit is in desperate hurt. Our moose population up here is the worst I've ever seen in my life. And we're killing possibly 20 cows. You're taking opportunity from the sportsmen when in other units we could get with cons of you. Thought about getting with conservation groups and maybe transplanting these 20 in units that are hurting rather than slaughtering them.
Well, yeah, two things there. One is we're not really taking opportunity, we're providing opportunity. I mean, at the end of the day, we have public hunters that have been putting in for moose, and they've been buying bonus points for moose year after year after year, and they say, when are we going to get an opportunity to do this? And we say, well, when we're at objective or exceeding objective, and so that's part of it. The other part is with these moose that are coming into town, we have been doing a lot of transplant efforts, and we take them back up into vacant habitats. We've been doing, when I was in the southeast region, we were taking moose clear from Ogden to the 9 Mile Range Creek unit because that was a new area. And so this is constantly on the mind of our biologist. If we have a problem moose, where can we put it where it's going to be in a good spot? So,
I got moose points myself, and I ask you a question. Personally, would you waste 20 plus moose points to have a cow moose on your wall?
If I had 20 plus cow moose points, I would. Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the public?
I've got one more. I forgot about.
I brought this up last November. I wasn't sure if anybody came up with a plan or whatnot to clarify the hunt boundaries for this the elk control. Because I personally know of 15 elk that were taken off the book list that were supposed to be, but they were told that they could. So is there any way that is there any plan in place to kind of re-clarify where people can hunt with that?
Yeah, we went back and we looked online, and I mean, we can show you. There is a map online that says the animal cell control.
There is in the proclamation, too. Sure. Are people going to listen to what says on paper or what the license agency and the law enforcement tells them? When it's contradictory, is it better to ask for permission or beg for forgiveness? You know?
Yeah, I would say this. I would say we're not perfect.
Yeah.
And so I mean, we try to do the best we can in communicating with our public, and these maps and these online resources helps. I hope we're not too critical of our law enforcement guys and front office people that have a lot to work through and navigate, whether it's fishing, hunting, trapping. I mean, there's a lot. And so if we've miscommunicated some of these things, we apologize. It's not our intent. And if we can do better, we will.
Well, I understand that. And that's just what I'm getting at. On three different occasions, I had one of the clerks, one was right here in this office, and the other two were over in Oakville at that radio shack. And I had to get out the proclamation and explain it to them.
Yeah.
And they told me that I explained it to them, even my stuttering butt and hesitating and whatever else, they explained it to them better than what they did in that class that you got that way.
Okay.
So, I mean, it just, like I say,
well,
I know of a lot of elk that were killed in places that they weren't supposed to be.
Well, hopefully it gets better. And thank you for helping us. I mean, if you're seeing misinformation out there, help us out. And you know, if you have an individual division person that's given misinformation, you know what? Let us know, and we can work with that individual.
Other questions? Public. All right. We'll move into some comments. We still need these comments cards. If you got a comment on this particular subject, please turn the card. There you go. We'll start with Ward Blake.
Thank you. A few things I want to address. Spent a lot of time down on the San Juan unit hunting elk, and pretty discouraged on the amount of cow elk we're seeing down there with the bulls. They've been wiping the herd out pretty good, and their objective is less than their on his draft a couple slides back, his numbers don't match up, and they did decrease the cow permits by 10 tags, although I don't think that's enough. I think the RAC ought to look into maybe considering decreasing that some more. It takes cows to make big bulls, and that's a prime unit in the state. Also, I'm concerned, I'd like to address the RAC about them cow moose permits. I'm not in favor at all of that. The average hunter don't want to kill a cow and put her on the wall. He wants to kill a big bull. Well, it takes a lot of cows to make bulls. If you start wiping 20 cows out a year, you're going to see it, I'll guarantee it. Thank you.
Thank you, Blake. John, what's your
John Larson with Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. Again, I want to thank Justin and his team for their presentation. Actually, for thinking out of the box on this special private lands, these private lands permits. You know, the whole goal behind that is to move those elk off where they're on public ground where we can get them. It's a big win for ranchers and cattlemen. It's a big win for private landowners, and I think it's a big win for sportsmen. So we appreciate it, the effort, and we accept the vision plan as presented. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Jerry. Jerry Slaw.
Jerry Slaw, Utah Bowman's Association. Thank you for this opportunity. Thank you to the division for addressing the Wasatch Unit, particularly with the private land owner tags. I'm glad it's coming into play. I think it might have should have been a couple of years ago, but hey, we're working at it, right? So Utah Bowman's Association accepts the recommendations as presented. And also, just a quick comment on where we talked about the Southwest Desert and how the Nevada elk and the Utah elk, we have a big number. I would just say that we come up with that same issue today with the book cliffs count. I would hope that we would address that before it may become an issue. So find out why one side of the canyon's counts are great and one side is not, and just something we should address sooner than later. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, well, let's get a primer ultra piece down on this item, and we'll discuss amongst the rack here. Discussion from the rack.
Yeah, I got a question. They're on your ranch, your elk ranch. So the general season archery elk that can hunt either sex starts around in the middle of August. Would that be deferred long enough to allow some of them calves to be mature enough to last a little bit longer?
Oh, if you use 2 weeks, it would make a huge difference. Six-week-old calf, it would be a significant difference. And archery, you don't have an opening day like rifle and get 100 of them the first day. You know, it's more staggered. So archery, I don't think you see the impact.
But
every week would make
that much of a difference.
I mean, there's a certain point. This is my opinion, Justin, so it's not based on science. But at 6 weeks, the late calves, you'd have no chance of survival shooting the mother on August 1st. If the calf was a June 10th calf. The May 20th ones, you probably have a chance. And so the later calves, it would make a huge difference, 2 weeks. And that's a fair significant, whether it's a third of the calf crop or whether it's a fourth, there's that second batch of calves for the ones that missed the first cycle. So it's a fair number. It's not one or two.
Sure.
So yes, I would say it makes a big difference.
Sure.
I've got comments about the cow moose as well. Is it Blake?
Yes, sir.
I would like to challenge the DWR to figure out a better way to manage the moose population than shoot cows. I know that our area over in Daggett and the North Slope, the moose population is down in that area more so than it has been in a number of years, from what I'm seeing anyway. And I don't know how much effort it takes to transplant moose. It's probably a little bit of a struggle, but I hate to see an animal like that slaughtered when they're so few and far between. And I know there's probably problem moose around the cities, and so that's probably a challenge, and maybe some of it has to happen. But I'd like to look at a different way to manage that.
Other discussion?
Wait a minute, Todd, and I'll make one. You know, as far as, and maybe Jill can help me on this, we don't have much trouble. I don't, but maybe Jill do. You have trouble in August, Jill? Starting in August.
I've had an elk move into my farm from the tree wall. It's something I get.
That's when you send them over to us.
If I get the chance, will you?
So I'm not going to speak for everybody, but I know it's usually the first part of September and we start having our trouble. Jonesburg, Middleburg. Yeah, but we're not as big as Joe. We're down on the river and stuff.
But is most of that damage occur to the corn during the rut and when the bulls start to rut? More so around?
No, actually, they'll start before the rut. They come in, what they do, they come in and clean the horns on the corn.
Yeah, when they start to grow, the
elk can I just make a comment? We do have depredations, just, you know, other than just Oray, obviously. You know, Tabiola Valley, it's all through July. We have elk into August, and stuff that gets worse in late July. It picks up heavy in early August. So there are places in the region that this has been first of August through the nation.
I don't like it. The brush creek, August is not really a problem for us there. Or he's a different set of elk, and that's a different ballgame.
Mr. Chair, I'm not trying to interrupt. I know you're having a good discussion, but one thing I failed to mention is we were picking dates on this. One thing that came up was the growing season. And part of this is truly to help private landowners. And so if you're having crop damage in early August and some of these things, that's really what we were trying to minimize in many cases. And some of the private landowners we talked to said, we want the ability to solve our own problems. And so if we have elk in our fields and they're causing legitimate damage, and it occurs. I mean, legitimate damage occurs in many pockets of the state. And so it's really just trying to balance how do we help these guys that are really experiencing damage. And I love that this was brought up because it's really forced us to think through it. And we did a lot more research on this than we did prior. So, I mean, I'm glad it came up, but that was the spirit of what we were trying to do, is help these landowners.
The balancing act there. Other comments? Discussion?
Is the cow moose separate from the bull moose preference points?
Yeah, and that was the point I was trying to make earlier, that we have certain different bonus points for antlerless moose than we do for bull moose. And so it's not a moose point isn't just a moose point.
It's people looking for meat.
Yeah.
It's not the same crowd that's trying to draw the bull tag, probably. That's a safe assumption.
My guess is, I bet you have some bull, because you can do both. You can put in for bull moose points and then antlerless moose points. So my guess is they're some of the same crowd, but just completely different set of scenarios and different reasons as to why permits are being issued.
I think the question period.
Sorry, it's coming.
It's over. What other discussion?
Randy, Mr. Chairman, sorry. I'd like to point out that even though the hunt begins on August 1st or 15th or whatever, the actual kill of cow, elk at that time is really going to be limited on private lands. It would be the elk that are depredating. And so when you look at that large number and you think, well, we have a bunch of orphaned calves, that's really not what's going to happen with that many wet cows being killed. The majority of those cows will be killed later in the season.
Other discussion? Well, entertain a motion. Does anybody want to make a motion on one particular part of the action item here? And if you do, please make that. And if we don't, then
I think I've committed at this point to make a motion on the private lands permits to back off the starting date to August 15th.
We have a motion made by Brett to back the beginning date of the private landowner tags to August 15th. Any second?
I have a question.
I have a question, too.
Is that then approve everything else what has been presented?
Randy?
No, that's just that. Just okay. That.
Could I ask a question about that?
Yes.
Does a landowner have the ability to get a deprivation permit in addition to this that he could start shooting whenever?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if we took this back to the 15th for the public, mm-hmm. would a landowner still be able to do something about the elk on August 1st?
Yes, they would. We can issue depredation.
And so if that's the case, I agree with delaying it.
So does that mean you're going to second it?
I would second that.
Okay, we got a motion and a second. Discussion?
Got a discussion and comment. There's something you better realize now, though, when you do this. August 1st, I did let Shelf come into my place and box causing damage. I will go after depredation. And I'll get it, whether I get vouchers. If I can't get that, then I will get a kill permit. They're going to get killed. What you'll take away is the ability of private individuals to come in on those places and kill them. If I kill them, then Morgan will be down there that morning and he'll pass them out. So be careful what you do, because you're not going to take away the killing. You're going to take away the opportunity for people to get tagged.
But
think about that.
But you'll also, will you not also take out that huge public eye seeing that many people out there hunting versus one landowner dealing with depredation?
That's my big concern, is 2,000 people on opening morning.
Is the sportsman fight enough already with the antis to give them something else to combat us with?
Well, I don't know that you're gonna, the landowners are going to let 2,000 people in on their places.
I don't know. Just put this thing about it.
You know, it's my opinion. I don't log the books. They're going to get killed. Whether it's vouchers or I get a kill permit, or he allow me to let some individuals come in and do it. So,
can I ask a question? Maybe just for the biologist. So the concern is if we take out too many cows, then we lose the fallen calf crop. How can we be ahead of that? Because I think that's the concern, is how could we be ahead of that? Is there any way to be ahead of that? Can you shut the numbers down if you started to see mortality rates within the calf crop as soon as cows were killed? I think that's the concern. We're just trying to see how we can maneuver around that.
I think for that year, likely no, because as was mentioned earlier, every week does help. And so if you're seeing some of this, it'll take time to document. But the one thing that, you know, talking with the region earlier, Randall in particular, very, very committed, where he's got so many permits on the South Slope and some of these other areas, very committed that if this is a problem in the future, we can only set these dates back. I mean, that we're talking about harvesting elk and what's the most appropriate way to do it. And, you know, when we were with the Wasatch Elk Committee and the statewide committee working through some of these, the idea behind this was for every elk that can be harvested in an area that's causing problems like depredation and damage and decreasing landowner tolerance, for every elk that can be harvested there, that's an elk that can be grown in a more favorable part of the unit. And so that's, again, it's balance. I love the discussion and you know, good luck to the RAC in making a decision. But that's the whys behind why we chose August 1st.
Justin, would it be helpful to show your slides of those pictures of elk disbursement? Those elk that have radio collars that you've shown in some of the other RACs.
Yeah.
So these RACs, everybody can see when they get pushed from the private.
No, I'm sorry, I'm about to cut you off.
I know. I had to get really good.
Good try.
But are you interested in seeing some of the color data on the Wasatch?
Well, I'm going to do, if you would like to look at something, we'll let you look at it.
I can pull it up quick.
I think for something's going to be beneficial for us.
Yeah.
But I think the discussion's kind of taken off. There's no doubt the concept is valid. That's not my concern at all. My concern is the humane side, the ethical side of the 2 weeks. It's nothing to do with the concept of private lands. Don't take me wrong.
Yeah, I understand.
I understand. I fully support the concept.
Okay. So a question I have is, so like Joe said, you know, the elk don't come into his place during hunting hours. They come in after dark. Now, if Morgan, DWR, you guys can get them, though, at after dark, right?
Yeah, we've done night removal in the past.
So really, that's the more practical way for
I think with depredation, there's so many. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Can I make one comment to that? One advantage, and we've thought through some of this. One advantage to these permits compared to the other landowner permits, the amount of landowner mitigation permits that they get. Those permits are good only for their property.
Mm-hmm.
And for Joe, he has a hard time because his situation, I understand, is a lot of it's got tribal land that he's also moved to, and some of the others are on the Yellowstone. But the advantage of these permits are, if those elk move on to any other neighbor nearby during daylight hours, these permits are still good on other people's property. The other landowner permits are not. these permits are valid where any private property that these elk move to, they would be vulnerable then to being harvested and removed. If we remove elk after dark, there's a still the high likelihood that they we will not get every we won't be able to shoot calves with the cows, and so you have the same orphaning situation will occur if we have to remove them or if the public removes them.
Kind of like Mitch's thing, though, they're going to get killed anyway, and like Brett is saying, public perception, can we make a big difference?
There's another public perception that really isn't being talked about, and that is when the division has to go and remove elk, we always get the calls, how come you didn't let the public hunter do that? And I don't know how many times we've got that biologist. You guys get that a lot up here because we always did. And so doing removal is not pleasant. It's not something that we enjoy. And there's always those types of questions afterwards is why couldn't you offer the public hunter that opportunity?
Especially after dark.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second. We need to any other discussion on this particular motion. Okay, we'll go ahead and call for a vote on this particular motion to back the season back to August 15th. All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Thank you. All those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4. Thank you very much. Appreciate you. It's not making me vote. So we must have one abstain. Who did not vote? That's only 10. There's 11 on this piece of tail.
I voted 4.
All those in favor, vote. Hand up one more time. Make sure I count right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay. 7.
Wait. Give me names.
The names?
Yeah.
All right, raise them one more time. We got Joe. Sure. Daniel.
I'm going the other way.
Oh, Joe Arnold.
I can't see. I've got all these guys. It was. Okay, Joe. Is it Tim, Brett, Dan, Andrea, Jerry, Daniel, Joe? Is that 7? Okay.
Yeah. That was how many fingers
so
you
had. 7-4. Well, you said 6-4, but it's 7.
Yeah, 7.
Okay.
7 is correct.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I missed counting the first time.
Okay.
Division math.
Yeah. 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 All right. Any other action items on this particular topic of Allen West permits? Anybody wants to make a motion on just a piece of it?
The whole management plan for antlerness?
Yeah, if you want to make one on the moose, or if you want to make one on just on a piece of it as opposed to the whole thing.
I would like to make a motion that the division excludes the moose plan for harvesting cow moose and changes it to transplant them to another area.
Is transplant an option?
Potentially. I mean, there's some budgets and logistical things that need to be worked out, and then making sure we have transplant sites that have been through RDCC and on approved plan. Certainly there's options that would have to be worked out. But
yeah. Right. We've got a motion on here to basically eliminate those the cow elk permits.
Moose.
Cow moose permits. In lieu of other options such as transplant.
Right.
All right. Do we have a second on that? On the
question.
Question?
Yeah. Are there people putting in preference points for the cow tax?
Yes. Yeah, and it's very highly sought after. In fact, some of the calls that we get on a continual basis is you keep selling me a point and you never offer an antlerless moose permit. We haven't done it in 5 years. And for good reason. Our moose haven't been doing good, but that's not the case in some of these pockets where we're trying to increase or that hunting opportunity and decrease moose populations.
Okay. I got a motion. I do not have a second. Do you have a second? Sorry, your motion's failed.
I have a motion that we accept the panelers' presentation or recommendations as presented, with the exception of that elk one went past already. So we accept everything except for the start date for the public land only tags.
Okay, thank you, David. Do you have a second for that?
Yeah, I'll second it.
Dan and David seconds it. All those in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10? One opposed? Would it be Jerry?
Yeah.
Would you use a favor, would you, Joe?
Yes.
Yeah. Jerry was opposed. That's right, right? That's 10, 11, that's right. Okay, we're going to take a short biological break since we've been here 3 hours. Let's break for just 10 minutes and resume about 20 to 10. We'll resume.